The views expressed on PFW in Progress are not those of the New England Patriots, its affiliates, or any of its partners. Content may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi, my name is
Fred Kirsch.
Hi, my name is
Andy Hart.
Hi, my name is
Paul Perillo.
Hi, the show is
PFW in Progress.
Hi, the show is PFW in Progress. My name is Mr. Liff. I lurk in lakes like the Loch Ness. World's best talk show. None can come close. Oh, how rude of me. Let me introduce the host, Fred Kirsch. Let's start with him first. His shoulders are boulders about as big as planet Earth. The captain of the ship, without a doubt, he's the boss. Fred, say a little something. Oh, wait, his mic's off. Andy Hart. Sometimes he's Andy. Catch him after lunch break, he could make the earthquake. He's the real wild card, truly enough said. One brain contained within the width of two heads. Paul Perillo, he's the sultan of soda. 2 liters, 4 liters, gotta meet his quota. I'm out of here, y'all, I gotta catch a flight to Greece. Tell Fred to stop dreaming about Geno's peace. Hi, my name is
Fred Kirsch.
My name is
Andy Hart.
My name is
Paul Perillo.
Hi, my name is the show is
PFW in Progress.
And Eric Scalavino.
All right, welcome to PFW in Progress. It is Tuesday here at Gillette Stadium, and the Patriots are enjoying their bye week, getting ready for no one.
I don't think they're enjoying it right about now because they're headed to the practice field and it's flipping cold out there.
It's in the mid-20s.
And they look cold going out there.
Brian Timms put his helmet on and then pulled his hood over the top of his helmet. And I think a lot of guys layered up on Bengay or something because the whole hallway reeks of like that medical ointment they're trying to maybe stay warm
with. Tiger Balm.
Yeah.
It's miserable out there. It's cold. All of a sudden, it's gone from 60 to like 20 in 2 days.
And we were lucky for a while, but I think winter has finally arrived.
Yep. Well,
anyway. Easy for you to say. You're not out there practicing for no game.
That's true, but they are practicing for a reason. Time to get ready. Three possible teams they could play, but I doubt that they're doing any, you know, installation on any of those teams at this point. Right now, it's just return to fundamentals, get things squared away. Let guys who, you know, are still injured kind of, you know, work on those things in the training room. A well-earned bye, and they'll take full advantage of it.
Yes. Now, the question is, will Josh McDaniels take full advantage of it?
Oh.
To interview with the Atlanta Falcons and San Francisco 49ers, who have reportedly officially requested permission to talk to him.
And this is the week that they're allowed to do that.
Yep.
For a coach that's still involved in the playoffs.
And it is happening around the league. I saw that maybe the Jets crew was headed to Seattle to talk to their defensive coordinator, who's a hot name. So they'll be all around the league. Josh said he hadn't thought about it yet as of yesterday, but I'm guessing by now he's thought about it because they've officially requested.
Well, and, you know, this is a week where we can talk about a lot of those things because, let's face it, that was a, you know, playoff preseason game on Sunday. That the Patriots dropped 17-9 to the Bills. So we're going to talk a little bit about it, not so much why they didn't win or why in all that, but, you know, are there concerns that you had going in that you still have? And, I'm talking about the offensive line. but even then, it's hard to, you know, get a true assessment of it without Vollmer playing in the first half and without Connolly playing at all in what was going on there. So a little bit tough. Without Brady not having Gronk and Edelman. So hard to make an evaluation about those types of things.
Yeah. I mean, when you lost, and not only were you missing two offensive linemen, I think most people would argue your two best offensive linemen in Conley and Vollmer. And now that doesn't, in my opinion, we've talked about it all year, how important is it for who's next to Nate Solder? Was that part of the problem earlier in the year? Is it part of the problem the last couple of weeks? Whatever. I don't let him off the hook necessarily for his struggles because of just the guy next to him. At some point, when I pay you $7.5 million next year to be my left tackle, I expect you to be good no matter what. Make the guy next to you better, not vice versa.
And there were some things offensively in the first half. They didn't perform well again. No. You know, they only had 6 points. But there were some things I thought offensively that had the personnel been you know, properly aligned. I think, you know, there was a pass to Steve Mineri, as an example,
that was just dropped,
you know, and if that's Gronk, I'm, you know, probably not going to be a drop, you know. So different things that happened in the course of the half that I think if you had Edelman and Gronk as well as the offensive line, and I don't think the protection was terrible when Brady was out there, even with those two guys missing, there was some problems, and the one that Solder got injured on certainly was a problem. He had to really just throw down Jerry Hughes on that play. But I thought the protection issues were more in the second half when it was all backups for the most part, add a third backup to the equation when Solder got hurt. And then part of that was Garoppolo not, you know, being like, you know, as quick as Brady in terms of his reads and reactions and whatnot. But overall, offensively, yeah, you still have to look at that offensive line and say, what are the potential things that can derail us in the postseason? Well, losing the battle in the line of scrimmage is one of them, and there have been signs that that could happen.
And the depth thing you talk about is important because we saw Josh Klein kind of fail again. And the depth of whoever would have to come in, we've always raved for years that, you know, we watch other teams and in a big game they lose one guy and it all falls apart. But that never happened to Dante. When Dante loses a guy, it's fine. Now are we in that category where if they lose one guy, it all falls apart up front?
Yeah, I was thinking the exact same thing, depth. You know, it used to be, you know, you'd throw in Kyle, what's his name, Ornberger, I forget.
Russ Hochstein.
Or Rich Ornberger.
Yeah,
right, or
yeah.
Not Kyle Orton.
Lost.
He's the quarterback.
He's not
the
even
Bills.
Really an example, though.
Because
he never really got thrown in for the Patriots.
In big games, you know, and they didn't seem to miss a beat. But that doesn't seem the case now, particularly Connolly. When there's disruption in that left guard position, really seems to disrupt what Solder's trying to do. And
because that's
troubling.
Yeah.
First and foremost, you want to have your five out there. And I think we're all assuming they'll be out there. Solder left the game with the knee injury, did not return. But he played a couple snaps after he hurt it. I thought he kind of jammed it. It's like it hit the turf and kind of maybe bruised it, whatever. And I'm assuming Conley and Vollmer will be back out there. Vollmer hasn't been hurt until the Friday injury report when he popped up with a back issue. But he's a guy with back problems, so I don't know whether that was utilizing the injury report to kind of play with things or if that's actually a concern. But I think we are all assuming that it'll be the five guys out there. And then you have to say, are they good enough? You know, is what we've seen over the last month where there's been some struggles and Solder's been at the forefront of some of that, is that going to continue?
Right.
And is that going to be, as what Paul said, what derails everything else? Because you look at it, there's no doubt, and we just shot our TV show, and one of the things I did is this is statistically as impressive a Patriots team sort of across the board as there's been in a long time. Whether you say scoring offense and defense, top 10. Red zone offense, red zone defense, top 10. Turnovers, second in the league in turnover differential, leading the league in points differential. Everything sort of a balanced football team would have, this team has. But we all know that comes crashing down if, you know, some player is running through Nate Solder on snap after snap and Brady's pooping himself and it all, I mean, the whole castle falls down if the foundation breaks.
Yep. So we kind of end where we started with some questions about the offensive line, and hopefully guys will come back healthy and everything will be okay. They've played every team except for the Ravens. So, and they've done well against every team.
And the Steelers.
Well, no, I'm talking about the next game. Then they can't play the Steelers.
Oh, okay. Two of the three teams they beat this year.
Oh,
they blew out.
Actually. You're just talking about this divisional round opponent.
Three,
okay.
Of
my
the
bad.
Possible teams, they
blew them out.
They played Cincinnati. They played the Colts, and they had no problem with the offensive line. In fact, they dominated the Colts with their offensive line.
Right.
The Ravens is the one team that they haven't played and the team that could possibly take most advantage of it.
Yeah,
so,
and the only thing I would say about the specific matchups, and I don't – they dominated the Colts on the ground. Early in the game, the pressure that the Colts were able to get caused interceptions.
Well, that's true.
So, you know, they didn't throw the ball very often that night.
Yep.
Because they didn't have to.
Brady had
interception. They were so dominant with the ground game with Jonas Gray with 201 yards that night.
Yeah,
so they didn't really have to throw the ball, but when they did early in the game.
That first half was terrible.
There were two interceptions in the first half that were caused by pressure.
That's true. All right. So, you know, we'll talk about that. But like Andy said early in the show, there's a lot going on with coaching, and some of it could affect the Patriots. I just don't know. Did anyone happen to see Michael Silver?
No.
On NFL Network?
I try not to.
On Monday.
Was he in a bar smoking weed with his pal?
He went off on some of these coaching candidates, and one of them was Josh McDaniels.
There's an anti-Josh sentiment around the league.
And for
as a head coach.
And people were retweeting and said, oh, you know, Mike Silver speaking the truth. He's laying it down. You got to check out what he's saying on NFL Network. And, you know, he said that not only was, you know, not only was he unsuccessful in Denver, he was an abomination. I mean, now Silver, if it's a Raider, I see him saying that because he's often critical.
Well, he has a thing with Josh. I don't know what.
Yeah, there's something going on with him.
And it's weird because Josh and Brady are tight. Silver and Brady are tight, and yet McDaniels and Silver have a thing.
Yeah.
And that's gone back a ways. I think that's a little bit over the top. I do think a lot of things went poorly in Denver, but he also did some good things, both in terms of the draft, both in terms of, I mean, getting rid of Jay Cutler was a ballsy move that I'm guessing Mark Trestman says, well, that was a good call by you, Josh.
But you have to have the kind of gravitas to follow that through. I think Josh's problem is it's not that he doesn't know football enough. It's not that he can't coach well enough. He was just not ready.
Right. Well, I think
he was just not football mature enough.
He was thrown into a situation he didn't expect personnel-wise when they got rid of those two veteran guys and he and Zanders,
two 20-somethings, were
suddenly running the draft room. And I also think personality-wise and dictatorship-wise, he tried to be Bill Belichick, but couldn't go all in with that. He was talking to some people. He was, you know, having fireside chats with Peter King on Sunday nights. And I think he didn't manage the media and the dictatorship naturally. And I think he will go into the second round knowing,
right,
I'm not Bill. There's certain things I'm going to do differently, much like a lot of coaches do. And I think he will learn faster, sort of like Eric Mangini, who, by the way, is going to interview with the Raiders for their job. Or
sort of like Bill Belichick.
Well, no, Eric Mangini learned too late, and he openly said that.
Yeah.
He might get a third shot and do it differently. But, yes, Bill did it his way the second time and succeeded. I'm a Josh guy. I think Josh will be fine. I think he did some good things and some bad things in Denver. I think when he gets a second chance, there'll be more good than bad.
Yeah, I think he knows the game. He just knows the game. It's, you know, someone inside here, I was talking to them, who's been with a few teams. He said that he feels that when these owners interview coaching candidates, they ask them the wrong questions. The last thing they should be talking about is...
I already know who he talked to.
Whatever.
Based on this.
But, you know...
Me too. It took me a while, but I just got it.
This is one of the things that made sense. But, you know, he said the last thing I would be asking if I was a head coach, I mean a owner, is X's and O's. I assume that they know football. What I want to know is, okay, crisis. You know, one of your star players just got caught with a DUI. What do you do? You know, you had three critical injuries. You know, how do you handle that? How do you handle those other leadership types of responsibilities that often derail a lot of these head coaches? Because they all know football, you know, and I think that
I wouldn't dismiss the football part of it, though, because I think that if you're an owner, you want to know what your coach believes from a football philosophy based on what you have for personnel.
Right.
And you want to make sure that meshes.
But isn't that your GM
like, I think
that
one
should
of,
be doing
one
that?
Of the things, well, I think no. The coach is part. The coach needs to implement the personnel that he's being given, not just the way he wants to play. He has to sort of cater some of that to his personnel. One of the things we talk about Josh, to bring it back to him, the Tim Tebow draft pick to me was bizarre on so many levels. And that's a football thing.
Right.
So I don't want to overlook that. I don't want to if I'm an owner, like, listen, if I'm an owner, my head coach, what are you going to do if, you know, someone gets caught with a DUI or whatever? Well, that's part of your decision there, too. You're the guy in charge. We getting rid of these guys?
Yeah, but
what are we doing? What's our philosophy?
Your head coach.
Are we a zero tolerance policy on this?
Your head coach is your de facto CEO. He's your guy.
Yeah, I think that stuff is less important, to be honest with you.
I
think how
important.
He handles his team is more important.
Well, that's part of it. That's how you handle your team. I think that's all part of it. I mean, you know, do you want to run a 3-4 or 4-3? If Woody Johnson's asking that of the next coach, they're doomed to fail again. because he should not he should hire a guy that he trusts his football.
That's different. I agree with you on that particular example.
But if Woody Johnson is asking Josh McDaniels, I know you know offense in this league and you're going to be a success. What about the defense?
Yes. That's what I'm talking about.
What's your plans there?
Now, I need to know what
he
thinks.
I want to know. Assistant, blah, blah, blah.
I would want to know.
What are you going to have for a staff? Where do you think you're going to get?
Of course.
There's a ton of football things that I think are extremely important in the interview process.
But I think those are football things. And I think
crisis management.
As an owner, I want to know that too. But
By the way, crisis management, if I'm the owner,
that's
I'm managing the crisis.
Exactly. That's my point. If I have a guy that gets arrested,
owner's own.
I want my owner.
Josh McDaniels can go away. I'm not letting him make the decision in the crisis management mode. I am making decisions in crisis management mode.
Yeah. And if we're in a crisis management situation, this is a group. We're gonna present a united front. This is what we're going to do. That's not the head coach's job. Sole responsibility. Right. When the Patriots had to deal with the situation with Hernandez, I thought they handled it incredibly well because everybody was on the same page. It was obvious that Robert Kraft and Bill Belichick had a similar message. And it was obvious that those guys, they had spoken. It goes down to media relations and everybody, all the other arms. The Patriots presented a united front on that.
That's fine.
I don't need to find out what he would do in that situation when I'm hiring him in an interview. That's not that important to me.
You can try to have a united front, but if the head coach screws it up, then
but you're not insured
of that
anyway.
Right. It doesn't. Yeah.
There's no guarantees there.
Yeah. I want a CEO. I want a guy who obviously knows football inside and out.
Right. And what is the CEO's job?
But I also
for
want a
company.
Guy,
what is the CEO's job for a company?
He's the leader. He's the visionary.
To make money.
Well,
that's the guy's job. So if he, you know, how he handles his personnel in a crisis management situation isn't as important to me.
In football, it's winning games. That's what the CEO does, and that makes you the money.
Right.
The winning comes
and that's
first.
That's what I'm concerned with first and foremost in an interview process.
Yeah,
I want to
know
what makes the guy tick.
Like, you know, Harbaugh's a good coach, the guy who's about to take the job at Michigan. He's a good coach, but he wasn't a good CEO.
I disagree. I completely disagree.
Well, that's why he's gone.
He's gone because he doesn't get along with the two guys that he works with.
That's what I'm talking
about. It has nothing to do with being a bad CEO. Yes, maybe Trent Baalke's the bad CEO.
I'm sorry, but he didn't handle...
Maybe Jed York is a bad CEO.
Then you can never hire anybody, Fred, because you don't know how it's going to work out until it works out.
No, that's true, but you do your best to eliminate, you know, any possibility. You do the best you can, but you have to know.
I'll take Jim Harbaugh as the next hire for any any of these teams out there looking for a new coach.
Jim Harbaugh. You know, leave amicably because he's a bad football coach.
Right?
He's a good football coach.
Right. So how
there's more to it than X's and O's.
He wanted more input.
Yes.
You could ask a question. Josh, I hire you this week. And you happen to win the Super Bowl in year two. How is that going to change the way you feel about this organization and what you're looking into?
Good question.
That's why he left.
Right.
Because he wasn't given more power and more security.
And was that question not asked?
I have no idea.
So,
and maybe when it was asked, it was, obviously if you win the Super Bowl, you'll get more power. And now they said, wow, he's really good. He wants more power, but we're not willing to give it
to him. On this
That's
team,
a two-way street.
On this team, right now, Trent Baalke is equal with you. How are you going to handle, a problem between the two of you if you disagree?
That's a fine question.
Right.
I'm fine with that.
Right.
That's a football question.
That's football.
Well, okay.
I have no problem with that.
But it's not X's and O's.
No, but
Fred, I'm not talking about
it's running the team. It's the organization. It's the football.
It's running.
What's his philosophy?
It's all football.
Some coaches don't want anything to do with personnel. Others do.
Well,
some coaches just want to coach.
In this day,
they don't want to be involved in the acquiring personnel.
Well, I in this day and age, I can't imagine a coach that has no interest in having input on who they bring in for the team, who they keep, who they let go.
Oh, no. All the coaches, they want input in terms of who we're going to keep and who we're going to play. But in terms of acquiring the draft, they might have a very small voice in that situation. It might be a general manager. A lot of organizations do it differently.
Yeah,
I'm with Andy on this one. I think that that's football to me, is figuring out how you're going to structure your organization, in terms of the decision-making process. That's football.
It's all about running the football team.
And Harbaugh is not the 49ers coach anymore because of personality clashes.
Right.
Not because of philosophy differences. It's personality clashes.
And by the way,
and you can't know that in an interview.
If Robert Kraft were hiring what I think you're talking about, the CEO that can, you know, sit up at the shareholders meeting and make everybody feel good, he would have never hired Bill Belichick when people don't hire Bill Belichick because he's not good in the media, he's not good in this. He hired him because of X's and O's and football,
yep.
Which I include building a roster as part of football. He didn't hire him because he was a good CEO and could stand up on the podium and
philosophies,
make everybody happy.
Economic philosophy, right, right. how to spread the cap and whatnot.
Exactly. He knew a lot more than just
football.
Bond
that's all football. That's football.
He only knew football, though.
Well,
he was only selling football.
It wasn't crisis management.
No, nope. You don't need to be a cap expert to coach football.
Right.
But no, I think you need to know the cap in the NFL. I mean, high school football, there is no cap. But you can be a good football coach.
I have right? no idea what you're talking about.
But that's in the football. NFL, you need to know more than that.
But that's football, Fred. Okay. This is the
Wait.
Point.
It's NFL it's football.
It's not crisis management.
I don't think there's a
but
single head coach who's a capologist.
But this,
they all have capologists.
But there's some coaches that
I can go to MIT and get somebody who I can who will
You don't
do
think it's
cap.
An advantage to know more than others?
It's always an advantage to know more than
okay,
others. Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Trent Dilfer.
Yeah. Thank you.
I don't know
it's
what that means.
It's also better to
you
win than lose.
Belichick has an advantage over some other coaches
no, I don't.
Because of his background in economics.
No, I don't, actually.
Understanding so
I
that
don't.
When the capologist talks to him, he understands it a little bit quicker and a little bit no. thoroughly than some other coaches.
I think
you
I don't.
Don't.
I think that's minimal.
I don't.
I think that
okay.
there might be an advantage there, but the advantage that Belichick has over the other guys is that he's a better coach.
I think you're underestimating that. I think you're right there, Paul. I think he is a better coach, but I think all those other things add up, too, and yeah. that's what makes him the best.
Yeah, I think that is irrelevant.
Wow.
Borderline.
I don't
irrelevant.
Know if I want to take it that far to irrelevant, but I don't think I take it as meaningful as you do. I think it's sort of another thing that he does well. But he would if he didn't have to worry about that stuff, they wouldn't have the guys that they have that handle those things.
Of course. He also has personnel guys because he can't do everything, but he can absorb the information and then extrapolate it and use it
yes.
to his benefit.
Yes, I do think that's an advantage because I think he's an intelligent guy.
I mean,
oh, he's an intelligent yeah. guy. And I will always go with it's better to be intelligent than not.
Exactly. Just like it's better to win than
But
lose.
I think his knowledge of economics and the cap is borderline
but
irrelevant.
Like you said, Paul, there's some coaches that, you know, they don't really care about having all that input put on personnel. And I think there's other coaches that really don't care to have that much input on salary cap.
Yeah, and I don't
think
it's that important if they're
Belichick
great coaches.
Belichick has a huge advantage over those guys.
See, I don't.
Yeah, I don't.
Oh,
I don't
God.
Think that.
I think it shows.
It shows because he's a great coach, Fred.
And
if he couldn't, if he couldn't coach, his ability to understand the cap would be meaningless.
His overall system and the consistency that they have in place.
Okay, there's a lot of guys.
A huge advantage.
What is John Harbaugh's economic background?
I have no idea.
He's in the playoffs every year.
And
I mean, like it, this is what I'm saying. It's not
understand.
It's not that big a deal.
Who doesn't understand the cap?
I don't know. But you don't think that he has a little bit better of a understanding?
I do think he has an understanding of it. I don't think it's all that valuable. It's not as valuable as you're
and
making
and
it
by
out
the
to
way,
be.
I think the reason he does is because he's interested. Maybe he doesn't trust as much as other coaches do, but I think anybody who wants to understand the NFL salary cap can understand it.
What it gets down to is
if
whether
you have
you
the
believe,
information at your hands, you can understand it, and every head coach has it at their hands.
This particular argument comes down to if you believe that the reason the Patriots have been so good for 12 years is because of their ability to set up their system, as opposed to the fact that they have a coach who's better than all the other coaches, and they have a quarterback who's better than
right.
all the other quarterbacks.
And a quarterback
because
who doesn't
that's
want to
what
get
it
paid
argues.
As much as
and,
all the other quarterbacks.
We don't have to take it here now. It's probably more of an off-season topic, but Fred is of the belief that the system and structure of the way the Patriots do things is the reason why they're successful.
No,
one of the reasons.
Yes,
one of the reasons.
It helps. Yes.
Okay. Whereas I would say, without the greatness of the coach and the quarterback, it all falls to crap. That's what I would say.
But you can have a great coach and quarterback, an X and O coach and quarterback. But if your system's terrible, that doesn't work either.
I would agree.
It all has to fit in.
I would agree. But I think there are a lot of other systems that are dramatically different than the way the Patriots do it. That are successful.
But they probably, you know, draft well and have a level of consistency so that when things happen, they know exactly what they're doing.
Well.
You know?
And they have good players, yes.
You know, but it, you
but
can't.
They don't have to do it the way the Patriots have done it, is all I'm saying.
No, no, no.
And I don't think the way the Patriots do don't put words in my mouth either. I don't think the way the Patriots do it is wrong. I think it's the way the Patriots do it. I think the overriding factor of their success, however, is the brilliance of the coach and the quarterback. And I don't think it's the system. I think it's the talent. That's all. That's where I think you and I would philosophy disagree.
You know, and I'll go back, you know,
philosophically.
Again, this all started with me saying that, you know, perhaps these owners aren't asking the right questions of prospective coaching candidates. I'll also go further and say, you know, when you hire a company like Korn Ferry, and I forget which team did that.
Was Atlanta, I believe.
Atlanta.
Yeah.
They're an executive recruiting company. Is that what they're
I don't really understand.
All they're doing is vetting backgrounds and whatnot. They're not looking for the best football coach. That's the way Chris Mortensen explained it yesterday.
Really? I mean,
which you need to do. We've seen places that didn't.
What are they looking,
Notre Dame?
What are they looking for? Because obviously they're not. They don't have a football background.
No, that kind of stuff lies on resumes, and guy doesn't
character.
Have a degree, and guy you know says he built his whole pregame speeches on going to Vietnam, didn't go to Vietnam, like that stuff. I think background checks.
Yeah,
some of that. And maybe
that's the way I understood it yesterday from listening to some of the stuff that Mortensen was talking
and
about.
And maybe some of it is, you know, background of Harbaugh type stuff, you know, digging in the bushes, you know, the equipment guy at the first school he coached at hated him because he was a total DB. You know, they might get into some of that, but I don't think they're saying his third down packages on defense are the best, so you got to hire
this
guy.
They're not coming up with candidates for Atlanta. I think Atlanta is giving them people to check on.
Right.
For example, Josh, you know, Michael Silver is saying it was an abomination in Denver. Well, what was an abomination?
What did he do?
And they kind of are beating the bush, scouting, like they would a player to find out, he got a DUI, but what's the story of the DUI?
The other thing I was thinking is that when you're a team and you make a decision to fire your coach, like Atlanta, you know, obviously this didn't happen in week 17. They were thinking that this would be it for Mike Smith. We'll see what happens. Same with Rex Ryan. Same with a lot of these coaches that get canned. Then, okay, now the rush is on. Now we have to hurry up and hire a coach because we want to be ready for the draft and we want to be ready for the season and all this stuff. You know, I was just thinking, if you're a team like the Jets and you feel like under the gun to hire somebody, might it be better to maybe just retain the staff, have an interim coach for a year until you're absolutely convinced that you're going to get the right guy instead of, well, we got to make a decision.
Well, I think you make that's a great point. And I think that whenever you fire a guy, I think you should let a guy go when you become convinced that the guy is not the guy. If you're convinced that Rex Ryan is not the guy, then I am all for firing him, even if you don't have a replacement in mind. I think too often they don't have any plan. Now, I think ideally, if you're going to fire a guy, you should have somebody in mind.
Yeah.
And I know that they were as recently as yesterday still going after Harbaugh, as we're watching his press conference with Michigan going on right now. I guess there were a few teams that were still trying to persuade him as recently as yesterday.
Oakland and the Jets, two of them I heard.
Yeah. So clearly they don't really have the idea, but I don't necessarily criticize Woody Johnson for making the move if he decided,
of course,
you know
not.
What, Rex just isn't the guy.
But
he's not going to do it for
us. There is a chance between now and whatever their self-imposed deadline is, they may not find the guy. I know it's hard. It's a hard sell to the fans, but I don't think it'd be a terrible thing to say, we just haven't found the right person yet, and we're going to elevate, you know, fill in the blank.
That's a tough sell.
Yeah, because there's got to be a coordinator out there, you know.
Because now you're saying we're just going to waste a year. We're going to spin our tires for a year.
There's got to be somebody that you like enough.
You could be wasting more than that if you hire the wrong guy.
But at least
what, two, three? I mean, what's the difference?
And you're not. To me, you're not wasting it. You could be wrong, but you're not wasting it. If you don't hire somebody, you're just wasting it. You're literally, you know, talk about bridge years. You're just doing nothing.
Yeah, I don't think you can do that way, Fred, either. I think that there's got to be a coordinator, you know, the guy in Seattle.
Anybody. It's impossible to say there are no coaches I'm interested
but
in.
But I'm not
Am I 100% sure he's the great one? No, but I'm interested.
But I'm operating under the premise that you can't get one of the names that you might have wanted. You can't get Jim Harbaugh. He's not available. You know, you can't get somebody who's established.
Right.
But you can always get Adam Gase
from
Denver.
In the case of the McCaskies, you fired your coach and your GM.
Right.
The Jets did too. Yeah, how do you know who you're an owner. Like, do you really know what you want in a coach? Like, do you have the background to make that decision?
What do you mean?
Well, hire a GM and let him hire the coach.
Okay,
I mean, what's the difference?
But I'm just saying that this is a process.
What do you think?
That
what do you think
are you afraid to hire people? Like,
You have to hire somebody.
Yeah, I am afraid to hire people because, you know, I think that a lot of times teams just
say. Says a lot. You hired me.
I would be saying if I was an owner, I wouldn't feel qualified. In a short period of time, in a couple months.
But how do you know that? Fred, if you bought an NFL team, then you damn well better get qualified.
What are you in the business for? I know about running a business, and I know about making money. But even Robert Kraft will tell you, this is different than all those other businesses.
Right.
That's why he would admit that he did it wrong.
How many times a year do NFL owners meet? How many times a year is there a combine? How many times a year? You're rubbing elbows and picking. You're in the industry.
They're all information gathering opportunities.
Well, and if you're not, then you're terrible. Then you shouldn't be doing anything. But I'm assuming you're a sponge and you're taking things in.
Sure, but he will admit that he did it wrong in the way he structured it after Parcells, and he had to learn through that experience. So that's why the second time around, he hired a guy that he trusted to give the keys to.
But he did it so wrong that at halftime of a Super Bowl, they could have won it. That's how wrong it was, right?
What do you mean?
Aren't you saying the end of the Bobby Greer and Pete Carroll?
Pete Carroll.
Having Bobby Greer have all the power.
He inherited Bill Parcells.
No, I know, but. Right.
And Parcells had the power.
Right.
When Greer came in with Pete Carroll, Greer had the power.
Well, Andy Wasichek had some power for crying out loud.
And Parcells didn't have the power. That's why he left, too.
But he had the ability up until that draft, and they overruled him, and that's when he said,
I'm out. So then he went the other way and made this, you know, kind of different structure that was terrible, that, you know, players answered to some people, other players answered to the other guys. So then he went back the second time he hired a coach, and he said, you know, I got to give it to somebody who's going to run it for me.
But Fred,
and he made the right choice in Belichick.
And you're looking at it from the vantage point of a team that for 15 years has had it set. Because the quarterback, the coach, the owner are all on the same page.
That's the part that I think has set them apart. Not the system itself. The fact that they've had the continuity that with three guys that have been worked so well together.
But I guarantee you, if the first 3 years of Belichick was a disaster, they would have been looking for somebody new.
Right.
Well, I mean, there was rumors that they were already thinking about it after the 0-2 start the second year.
But that's what business and work and hiring and firing is all about. I mean, it's no different than.
You got to keep doing it.
You know, Steve Jobs dies and they have to bring somebody in. And guess what? If you weren't killing it, what's his name? Whoever runs Apple now, the guy. If you're not killing it and you're not coming up with new iPhones you're out too, and they're going to have to bring somebody else in.
I just wonder if a lot of these owners are doing it the right way when they go to choose a new head coach.
But how do you know you've done it the right way?
And if you could do everything the right way and get the wrong guy.
I understand that.
Right?
There's no manual.
You can increase your odds by taking the time.
I don't think you necessarily can.
No? You don't think so?
Try to get as much information as possible
on
everybody.
So you'd rather just rush into it?
Well, wait a minute. Why are you saying
rush
into it?
So why don't you just wait forever on anything?
I didn't say
wait forever.
iPhone 6 should never have come out, because if they had waited a year, guess what? There would have been a better one.
That's a good – I'm glad you brought that up. Because
and yet
Apple,
they're killing it.
Apple is famous for holding off on products when they're not ready.
But why don't they just wait forever? If you waited longer, there'd always be more.
That's ridiculous. But
Fred is saying they can take a year to make a coach.
They will never release a product until they think it's absolutely ready. That's a very good
example.
But
it's never ready. How many times if you touch here, you lose all your calls. Oh, we got to come up with a thing for that. Or guess what? My phone works great for everything except calls on this
new
operating system.
There's always a degree of uncertainty.
Exactly.
You can increase your odds by doing your due diligence.
So what is your definition of rushing into it?
You can always take longer and have more information, but at some point you got to get off the pot.
At some point you do. But
what's your definition of rushing to hire a coach? I'm just curious. You keep using that, so you can rush into it.
When you feel you've compromised. When you, as an owner or as the hiring person,
so you're telling me that you would hire a coach.
I just got to make a decision, and you're not 100% sold on the guy. That's what I would say rushing into it.
Well, but you can't find a guy that you're 100% sold on?
I don't know.
That's insane.
Can you imagine if Fred had to draft like 28th overall? Oh, geez. I'm not 100% sold. What do I do?
He'd be in the 28th slot, and he wouldn't pick until 44, because that's when they would keep skipping over him, because he'd run out of time.
Yeah, you have to make a decision.
So do you call a team that hires a guy and after 2 or 3 years fires him, having been sold on the guy when they hired him?
Yes.
I don't know.
I doubt it.
No, I think Robert Kraft was sold on Bill Belichick. He could have fired him 2 years later. Had things turned out differently, he could have fired them after the 0-1, the 2001 season. If he had gone 4-8 with Bledsoe, he may have been out of a job.
So you don't think Robert was 100% the Niners were sold on Jim Harbaugh?
I think that
they didn't know that this was going to happen. This is just what happened.
Yeah, I think that if after 2 years, unless the coach did something just horribly and just made a fool of himself, if you fire him after 2 years, you probably weren't sold on him to begin with. You know,
I think he probably didn't do what you thought he was going to do.
Right. Yeah.
Who's the guy the Bruins had to fire after?
Dave Lewis.
Yeah. They were all in on him.
It's terrible. I just don't understand why you would the way you make it sound, no one would ever make a mistake.
Everybody would be happy with every hire they would ever make.
The way I'm talking about, they'd make less mistakes.
How?
No, I don't think so.
That's no guarantee. That's no guarantee.
You never said it was a guarantee.
Time
but you make it sound like,
if you take enough time to be 100% convinced, you'd never make a mistake.
There's no direct correlation with time and success. There isn't. There just isn't. Because I take another week, am I going to be better? No, there's no guarantee.
I agree with you. I agree with you in one regard in terms of everybody seems to be, we got to have this in place by this and this in place by that. And the draft is coming. And I don't necessarily think of it to be as urgent as that. And I think that there are plenty of examples of guys that got hired a little bit later that have worked out fine. But I don't think that the flip side of that means that you rushed into a decision. There's a lot of guys to pick from. I find it awfully hard to believe that you're not convinced on any of them. Under your scenario, that you shouldn't just hire anybody. If you're not 100% convinced that this guy is the guy, I mean, the Raiders have made a lot of curious decisions. I'll put them on an island by themselves. The other 31 teams, I don't know, I'm pretty sure Jacksonville was convinced Gus Bradley was the guy.
Right.
And so far it hasn't worked out, but I don't think they're convinced that they're wrong. I don't think he's going anywhere after two, bad records. I think they like what he's building, and they're willing to be patient with
him. It's no different than the Colts picking number one overall, and Andrew Luck is a slam dunk. That's the only choice. That doesn't happen every year, but a team has to pick number one overall every year, right? And yes, sometimes there's an obvious candidate. With Robert Kraft, it was Bill Belichick. He had, a six-year history with him or whatever it was. He liked his it was the perfect candidate. That doesn't mean it was right. It could have failed miserably.
Sure, of course, there's always,
so you just,
that possibility.
You have to make a decision.
You can't eliminate it, but
there are parameters in place. There are schedules in place that, yes, it's more ideal to get it done in the right time.
It is, but I think a lot of times those schedules are self-imposed, and I think that teams sometimes don't make the right decisions because of that.
But, Fred, if you wait, okay, say you're not a believer that you have to have the guy by February 1st because you want him to go to the combine. Well, is a new candidate going to come available between February 1st and February 15th?
Right.
No.
And in your scenario,
you know all the candidates.
If you're eliminating guys, if you really like Josh McDaniels and you can't hire him until after the Super Bowl, then that's a mistake. If that's the guy you wanted and you said, but I got to have a guy by January 20th, I can't wait, that's a mistake. I don't think that happens as much as you think
it does.
I don't
think it does either. I think it rarely happens. But, yes, there are parameters. You have a draft coming. You have a combine coming. You have to put a staff together. There are time parameters.
But in my mind, I know who I'm hiring. So it's not as – you know what I'm saying? If I know if I met with Josh McDaniels this week and he knocked my socks off if I'm San Francisco, that's my guy. I'm going to hire that guy.
I can wait.
That's
I think you'd be like Stephen Ross, where you're trying to talk to Harbaugh because you want him, but you don't want to lose Philbin quite yet, and you're talking, and then the whole thing just blows up.
Yeah, you'd end up like Stephen Ross, because you'd get caught talking to other guys while you still have a guy under contract, and that's what happened with Miami last year, and I think that's why they ended up sticking with. I think that's why they made that announcement on Philbin this year, is because of what they did last year. Making overtures for another guy while they already had Philbin.
But more importantly, we're kind of discussing this from a bass-ackwards angle because we're not hiring anybody in New England.
No, but it is interesting here with Josh McDaniels, and we talked about
that. No, I know,
that
but
was
from
the
a Patriots perspective, the issues would be Josh being in any way distracted. Now, they've gone through that a billion times over the years with all these guys.
Yeah, I don't worry about that as much
the
anymore.
The other side of it is replacing him. I think Brian Daboll might not get the title, but probably would roll into to some degree the position because he's a multi-time coordinator, multi-time guy here, has a relationship. Everything about it screams that Daboll is the guy. But the I think the topic of the day that I'm surprised we haven't hit on yet is just the Brady restructure and the money and what that means, what it doesn't mean.
A lot of misinformation out there about
Clear it up, Fred.
Who wants to do it?
You.
No, I think there's been this misconception all along that when Brady does these things, it's, you know, he's being benevolent and, you know, magnanimous and doing it in the interest of the team, which is not the case. Yes, in a lot of these cases, it helped the team, but it did not hurt Tom Brady.
Actually, it generally helps
Tom
Brady.
Yeah, it always helps. He just makes his money earlier than he would under the, you know, what the contract was structured. And that's the case here, too. You know, he took $24 million, you know, whatever it was. It was
out of guaranteed
escrow. It was fully guaranteed for in his skill. Contract for the last 3 years. So if he was cut for really any reason, he would get that money. And the new contract or the new structuring says that only if he's hurt will he get that money. And, you know, thank you for doing that. They added $1 million to each of his last 3 years. So we got an extra $3 million. At the end of the day, Brady is still going to see that money one way or the other. If he stays with the team, obviously he's going to make the money. He's not going to be actually making $3 million more. And if he gets cut, some other team's going to give him well beyond what he's contracted to make here.
It's literally guaranteed, though, because it is guaranteed for injury. So even if you said, well, if he dies, he doesn't get that money. No, that would be an injury that costs the
right.
That would be guaranteed. Or he has a career-ending injury, it's guaranteed. And if he doesn't have a career-ending injury, we have no better example than Peyton Manning, who was on the verge of a career-ending injury with that neck thing. I mean, remember the workouts at Duke behind because he couldn't throw? If Brady reaches that stage, he will get more than $24 million guaranteed. I guarantee it.
And you can say that, well, Fred, but they wouldn't even be doing this if Brady hadn't done that original contract that gave the Patriots all this cap relief late.
That was even more beneficial.
Right.
Brady.
That was even more beneficial.
$57 million up front, I believe.
We talk a lot about these contracts that are backloaded and, oh, it's $100 million, but, you know, the player A will never see that because it's all this. Brady's contract was the opposite. It was all on the front
where
he got it. So he automatically got the money. And then, of course, it lowered as, you know, the contract matured. So, you know, it's just a look, it's not like Brady's not a good – he's a great guy. The fact that he even picks up the phone when they want to do this stuff, I think a lot of players wouldn't do. But it's not like he's making any less money than he was before.
It's more.
Yeah,
and it's $3 million more.
And as Andy pointed out,
he got paid $3 million to pick up the phone.
Right.
As Andy pointed out, too, you know, if he gets in a situation where he does leave here, he's going to be in a more advantageous position to make even more money. And I think in some ways, you know, we talked a lot about the speculation behind the whole diet and the Sports Illustrated thing with the TB12 Center and all that stuff. And he seems to be really trying to get it out there that he's in the best shape of his life. He feels better than he ever has. He's still capable of playing at a high level. And whether that's here or somewhere else.
Right.
That's what it seems to me like. He's trying to get the message out there that I'm intending on playing. And now he puts himself in a situation that they can cut him.
Yep.
And he can dictate more where he goes.
Now, in the issue of the $24 million, it's been written, well, this gives the Patriots an extra $24 million to spend. That's kind of right. I mean, it does give them $24 million in cash. If the contract had stayed the way it was, the Patriots would have to put this money aside because it was guaranteed. They wouldn't be able to spend that money anywhere else. So now they can, you know, even though he's set to earn that.
And it doesn't affect the cap.
It doesn't affect the cap. The cap, they don't pick up money under the cap. It's just
it gives them it's just cash money to spend
in the
here and now.
And that could come in handy. I mean, that could come in handy.
Very few people know that.
Yeah.
Only, I mean, I assume your name has to be Kraft and maybe Belichick to know how much cash money we have
sure.
to work with.
Right.
I mean, that's need to know information, and no one here needs to know that.
I mean, to the fans in the NFL, this is all paper being shuffled back. But to the player that gets that check, this is real cash money. That check better clear.
Right.
You know?
But it is funny.
Yeah. Could you wait till Thursday before you cash this?
What does he mean? It is funny how it ends up, though, every time. And this is not the first. This is at least the third or fourth time that Brady's been through this. And it always gets portrayed as this, as you called it, benevolent act. And
Is that coincidental?
And some people put it out as a pay cut.
It's not a pay cut.
Restructure and pay cut are not the same.
But is that
and in mostly Brady's situation, it's a pay increase,
I
as this one was.
I don't know that it's ever not been.
As this one.
I think every situation he's made more money. I even heard one commentator
on the radio say, oh, the NFLPA should talk to Brady because this is hurting other players. It's actually the opposite. If more players had front-loaded contracts, they would love it.
Yeah.
You have to have the stature of Brady that demands something.
And very
like
few
that.
Players have guaranteed money of any kind other than the actual signing bonus that they get. So it's really not impacting a lot of players.
Yeah.
You know, people say, you know, the other quarterback should do this. Well, the other quarterbacks don't have, you know, the last 3 years of their deal were guaranteed. You know, how many players have that situation? I'm sure there are some, but they're not a lot, that have guaranteed deals in the future.
Yep. So, it's good stuff. Eric's here, just back
it's
from
cold
practice.
Out there.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. Well, it's pretty cold out.
Yeah.
I mean, 20s.
I mean, it's seasonably cold. It's not like Arctic.
Yeah, it's just because it's been so warm.
Yeah,
it's
been 60, and now it's 20.
Yeah, well, it's back
to normal.
Well,
that's the thing that gets you.
It's back to normal.
Your blood thinned out.
Got you, Freddie.
Yeah. Well, after vehemently protesting via his Twitter account after the game on Sunday that he was not in a walking boot, that he was fine, the only player not at practice today was Brandon LaFell, who hurt his ankle early fourth quarter, I believe it was.
Yes.
And the only guy out there. So that's great news for Sebastian Vollmer, Nate Solder, Silver Seelinga. All those guys got hurt during the game, but they were out there at practice today, 2 days after a game on a, you know, another rare Tuesday practice. That's great news injury-wise, but LaFell, a little disturbing because he actually came back in the game.
Correct.
Where those other guys didn't, and Vollmer wasn't even active.
But it's also,
it could be just precautionary. Yeah, I know.
12 days away from a game, and no need to push it. And, you know, I said this post-game show, but I want to say it on here, too. The immobilization thing has become the first step for anything. Put it in a boot.
Mm-hmm.
Let the healing begin. Now, whether he was in a boot or not in a boot, Ben Volen saw him in a boot, tweeted it. Brandon LaFell said he wasn't in a boot and deleted that tweet. So, who knows? He probably was in a boot. I don't know why he lied.
He was out in a boot.
Yeah.
But like you said, it's not the end of the world when someone's in a boot.
It's the first step.
But I will...
End of the world?
No.
Let's hope not. And in past years when they've had a bye and this week of practice, they have been known to give a lot of players the practice off to get back from or just to precautionary to recover from whatever. The fact that they have everybody basically out at practice this week is a very, very good sign for them that they're in pretty good health shape.
Despite the injury report that people were reading too much into when it had 15 guys questionable and all
certainly
that.
Much healthier than they were heading into the playoffs last year.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, hell yeah. Ready to roll, bitches.
Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. 508-298-0398 is the Ace Ticket Hotline. You know, Eric, that's the first time I gave out that information for the show. We've been arguing.
Really?
For the show, yeah.
Because
Fred, what?
If Fred fired his coach, he might not hire one for a year because he would want to make sure
he wasn't
that he
convinced
really
that he had the right guy.
He's like you with Gronk.
Wait a minute.
Just wasting years away.
He would just, like, retain the staff and go.
Who would coach the team?
He would have an interim coach.
He would have an interim coach. You
know, somebody already on the staff?
Yeah.
He doesn't want to be rushed into decisions.
I want to make sure I've got the right guy. I think it's that important of a job where I don't want to create these deadlines for myself.
Well, are you gonna compensate the person that you choose to be the interim coach?
Sure. Give him the big office.
Give him worth the while?
Yeah.
Well, that's more of a promise ring.
It's
not really proposing. Hmm. We'll promise. You know, put a ring on the finger, and we'll see how it goes.
You get the new office,
so we'll buy a hope chest for you,
it's
too.
It's not a money thing. It's you know.
It's a meow thing.
No. It's just making sure that I get the right guy.
But there's no guarantee that a year later you're going to get the right guy. But
I just don't know how many guys have been hired over the years that the owner said, yeah, I'm going to hire this guy, but I'm not sure he's the right guy.
See, the problem I think most owners
have
now is the problem our society has now. They're too impatient with things. It used to be coaches had a 5-year plan, and you needed the 5 years to get your players into the system, to implement your system, to see if it actually works, to develop a young quarterback if you have one, or to get the kind of players that you need. Now, if you don't win in half a season, you're out. It's ridiculous.
You cannot have a 5-year plan now.
See, I like that.
You can't.
It's ridiculous.
I could definitely have an argument about that. I think in this day and age, if you don't have any sign, I mean, the only stipulation would be what Eric said is that quarterback. Like, I can be like Gus Bradley. I could sit there and say, you know what, There's nothing in place there. He had no one as a quarterback his first year, and then a rookie coming from a smaller kind of school the second year. I'm willing to give him some more time. If he puts up two more, you know, if puts up another 3-13 next year, sorry. He ain't the guy. I need someone else.
Well, and the flip side of that is the reason you're seeing that is because so many guys can do it quickly.
That's what I'm saying.
Jim Harbaugh, Bill O'Brien, you know, guys come in
and
have immediate
success. In this day and age, if you can do it, if you know you
if there's enough examples
of
the
success,
if you can
do it, you're going to have success right away.
To say it's possible. So,
but are those guys the exception? Those guys to me are the exception. That you can come in and you can instantly turn a program around.
I don't think they are.
I'm not sure they are.
I think the good ones do it right away.
The good ones have an immediate
reaction
on the roster.
How many good ones are there, though? I mean,
well, you can tell me there's not a lot of great coaches.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, but that's part of it.
But,
so if I know I have a bad one, I got to keep looking for a good one.
Yeah, I agree.
Like the only I said this before, Eric, before you got here from practice, Oakland I would sort of eliminate from the equation because, you know, they just hire a new coach.
Dysfunctional anyway.
There's a lot of dysfunction there. But, you know, like Mike Pettine in Cleveland was a guy that got a lot of static. I think he showed in his first year, he showed some promise.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, we'll see what he has. Maybe he is a good coach. I don't know. You know, he doesn't have a quarterback either. So we'll see. But he was able to win some games. Bill O'Brien, he showed that he can coach. He could put together a, you know, can he sustain it? Can he do it? We'll see. But, you know, there are other guys like Mark Trestman. I'm sorry. I saw that he can't coach. I don't need to wait around. 2 years was enough for me.
Some of Andy, us didn't
Andy
need
made
2 years.
The, you know, Andy, you know, he made the determination at the combine.
Well, I remember that.
Because he looked funny. I think that you know when you don't have the guy. You might not know if you have the guy, but I think you know when you don't have the guy.
I
don't have any problem with
you know,
getting rid of him.
Maybe 5 years nowadays is unrealistic, but I still think teams get too impatient to pull the trigger on guys who are either their quarterback or their coach.
Yeah, see, the quarterback is the one thing that I would relent to you on your side. Sometimes a guy could be a good coach and just doesn't have the quarterback in place. You got to give him a little longer. Rex Ryan. He got longer because he didn't have the quarterback. Right? So it took him 6 years.
He got longer because he saw some feet.
Oh, my God.
That is astounding to me.
I even got Fred to laugh at that.
No, but he was shaking his head in disgust.
At you.
No, he was laughing at you.
At you.
He enjoyed my creativity.
As soon as he went, I knew something was coming.
Right.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Because I said long.
Right.
And
right.
He laughed.
So you
long.
Said
he got longer.
Rex got longer.
Good thing we never had Howie Long on our team. Otherwise, you know, it would be just a laugh fest.
And Howie got longer.
But, yeah, so, Eric, your quarterback stipulation, if you have nothing at that position, it's hard to win even if you're a really good coach.
Tell that to Bill O'Brien.
I want to read Peter's email from Cambridge who says he's just another PhD who listens to PFW. We have a lot of them. I wrote last week with 3 points, and this is my follow-up. First point was to run play action with Gray and Blunt, not just Vereen and Bolden. Once again, McDaniels was too predictable. If Blunt was in the backfield, it was a run. Being predictable is bad. I shouldn't be able to call the play from my couch. It's no surprise that the Bills' line and linebackers were ready to stuff Blunt every time to hit the line. Second point, I wanted Brady to sit. You guys dismissed it because you wanted to see the offense get better. Problem was it was predictable that Edelman and some O-line guys would sit. And when they decided to sit Gronk, a good thing, that should have sealed it. Don't play Brady. I think he's hurt and can use the rest, but even if not, you stick Brady behind an O-line with holes and take away his best weapons, how did you think that was going to work out? You wanted the offensive line to march down the field for a few series, score some TDs, and then sit Brady, as we've seen in numerous preseason games, but this wasn't the preseason, and you never considered what I was worried about and what actually happened. The offense looked predictable and inept against an 8-7, now 9-7 team, and Brady took a half dozen extra hits he didn't need to. Now we are left worrying about what offense will show up in 2 weeks. Thankfully, Brady was not seriously hurt, but was it really worth the risk? And third point,
of
the same.
Does he say he would not have worried about the offense coming off the performance 2 weeks ago? I was going to be worried about the offense if Brady didn't play still because they haven't been good
in
December.
That's his point. He said, regardless of what happened, knowing that you weren't going to have Gronk and
No. I was worried about the offense coming out of the Jets game.
And he still is.
I am too
because
they played badly again.
No, but he's saying that.
No, I'm telling you what Andy and I think.
Oh, no, but he's saying that people wanted to see Brady out there maybe to see
and
the
do
offense
well,
get a
yes.
And he's saying that it wasn't going to do well regardless.
Yeah, well, I think that's ridiculous. Yeah.
Well, I do think the lack of Gronk and Edelman, I didn't know Gronk wasn't going to play. I assumed that he would play. I didn't know that he was obviously, as Mike Reese puts it, the clear MVP, the most valuable piece of this team, because he was the one who was put in bubble wrap. The others were not. Revis and Brady were not put in bubble wrap.
Right.
I didn't realize that you were precluded from moving the football if Gronk didn't play. I mean, I knew that they weren't going to be the number one ranked offense in football without Gronk, because I saw that last year. But I wanted them to play a little bit and move the ball. They didn't.
Third point was that they should start Garoppolo and pound the run. I still think that would have been better. You would probably have lost, but we wouldn't have thought anything about it. Instead of coming out of this game confident, I feel pissed. I want to show other teams nothing. Instead, we underscored our primary.
Well, you showed him nothing. You accomplished that.
See, that's what you're missing, Fred. He came out of this game feeling different or something about this team. I'm saying I would have worried about the offense regardless of this game.
Instead, we underscored our primary weakness for everyone to see. I wanted to just,
what is it?
I wanted to just shrug off this loss as a we-didn't-try game.
Well, that's what it was.
But we tried, and for two quarters, Tom Brady was beaten badly, and
they
by now try. Retired.
Tom Brady was not beaten badly in this game.
And they didn't try. You just said they didn't have Gronk, they didn't have Edelman, they didn't have Vollmer, they didn't have Conley.
I wanted other teams to fear us, but that seems unlikely now. I'm angry
confident. You think you would have been more feared if all of those guys didn't play.
I think he's overreacting a little bit. I wanted to read it because I wanted to get your...
No, I wanted you to read it too because I
think... You didn't let me.
Well, no, you wanted us to react and we were so impassioned to react.
I was done.
Well, I mean, we read it in spurts.
And when a guy has points, sometimes we react to the points.
No, that's okay. It's fine. It's fine.
I just don't think they tried the last two games very hard. The Jets game and
I disagree
certainly
with the
Bills game.
I wish I thought they hadn't tried.
Yeah, no, they tried against the Jets, I think.
I think they put a lot into the Jets game. I disagree with that.
I think their offense has been stumbling, fumbling, and bumbling a little bit.
This game, I don't think had any intensity to it. I think they treated it like a preseason-type game. We're going to go out there and we're going to play hard with who we have on the field, but we're not putting a lot of preparation work into it. I don't think there was a lot of game planning involved. I'm sorry, I'm with Andy on this. If they didn't play at all, you'd feel like people feared the way they had been playing in recent weeks? Because I wouldn't have been fearing the way they played.
If they had taken the last, 5 or 6 weeks I need to take off, they would have been feared. Because in the middle of the year, they were feared.
Yeah.
Well, but since they were rolling,
they
haven't been
feared. They haven't scored a touchdown or what's your numbers, Paul? You got 6 games in the first quarter?
It's 6 games on the first. I think it's the first drive.
I mean,
they
these first halves on. Of offensive ineptitude have become a pattern.
And a lot of them have been early in the second half as well. It has become
a pattern.
And it's
more than this week.
And they've also, the crutch that has sort of developed, and fortunately it's been a constant, a lot of the offense they have been getting has been set up by the defense and special teams. And that even happened again on Sunday. With the long punt return by Amendola set up a 14-yard drive for a field goal, for one of the field goals that Brady put on the board. So they had one 80-yard drive on Sunday.
You sure about that? I thought that was the Garoppolo field goal. Maybe not.
No, I'm pretty sure it was the second Brady field goal was a
15-yard
drive.
Garoppolo was the fumble recovery, right? His one of his field goals set up?
Oh, you know what? It might have been off the fumble. They might have gotten a field goal off the fumble. Maybe that's what
Jerry
it was.
Jerry Collins thing?
Yeah, I don't know. I'll have to look at that. You might be right, Andy. The special teams may have set up the other one, but they didn't have any sustained drives in this game. They had one 80-yard drive in the first quarter. That was it. Yeah. I think they were 5 for 15 on third downs. They didn't maintain possession of the ball. That's been a little bit of a trend. The Jets game, they couldn't do it. Miami game was really deceptive, the 40 points that they scored that game, because they didn't do anything offensively early in that game.
Then they exploded.
And then all
the
of a sudden
quarter.
The turnovers and stuff came and became out of hand.
I think they got tired as the season
you might be right.
went on. And
they should have taken December off.
Well, no, not that they should have taken December off, but I think naturally...
Well, that's what the email I wanted. Just let everybody take a rest and it'll be magically fixed in the playoffs.
I think maybe a little psychologically they felt like they were on such a good roll. They were headed towards the number one seed. Then they get to the game where they get the bye week secured. And I think they kind of psychologically, subconsciously maybe shut it down a little bit because physically I think the whole season took its toll. They knew they were getting this week off. I think it was just natural.
It's natural when you see that inactive list in Hightower.
Right.
And for this Buffalo game? Absolutely. Yeah. I'm disagreeing with Eric a little bit in the Jets game. Yeah. I don't think they took the foot off the gas in the Jets
because
game.
Because remember, they were still playing for something.
They had a lot to play
besides
for.
Besides just playing the Jets.
They were playing for the number one seed, but they already had a bye. So I think I think maybe subconsciously they felt like they had at least accomplished what they wanted. They were going to get a week off.
I just didn't see a lack of intensity in the Jets game that
I
saw this week.
Well, not as much, but I still saw a lack of intensity in that game.
Yeah, I didn't see
until
that.
The very end.
I saw
end.
Brady.
I don't know. They had, but that's the thing.
Screaming and yelling
at
people.
I could see maybe defense, but when Gronk's in there and Brady's in there and all.
But they're human.
They should be able to score points.
But they're human.
I know.
They're not going to be perfect
every
week. I give the
Jets a lot of credit for that game. I think they played.
They did.
You know, a great defensive game as, you know, but I think they were trying.
I'm not as concerned about the offense after this week that I think
certainly not
as many people.
I agree with you on that. I have nothing that happened Sunday is specifically affecting me for the playoffs. Mm-hmm. It's what happened, as Andy said, the three, four, five games before Sunday.
Yeah, if you wanted to be feared, you literally had to turn it back like 6 weeks.
I'm confident that they can turn it around. Green Bay, low 20s, right? Low 20s, San Diego, low 20s,
right.
Jets, teens. This is not a Buffalo thing. This has nothing to do with Buffalo.
No.
This is the way the offense had been playing heading into here's what we've been saying.
Just take first halves, though.
If this was another team, if this was Green Bay or Seattle going, people would be saying, yeah, they peaked too early.
Right.
If Patriots fans would be saying, oh, they peaked too early. That's what people would be viewing this as if it weren't our team.
However, I would also look at it, if it were not our team, as this is a team that showed it can change course midseason, and they're very healthy at this point, and they have a week off, and they're going to be home. I like their chances.
I know people are tuning in. There they go again. They're all negative.
There's no negativity here because I actually agree with Eric. I think that the divisional round is going to be a walkover.
I've already picked them to win the AFC title
and
game
I think
27-20.
That
I just need to fill in the opponent.
They're going to be favored in the playoff games, in the AFC. I'm sorry. There's no negativity.
There's a reason why Tom Brady stands on the sideline in the second half against the Bills with a scowl on his face.
Well, because he's a competitor.
Exactly. But
he knows they're not playing
to do
well.
Better. You know, he knows that.
But he also knows that he came in with the offensive line he had in week one, basically, all messed up and jumbled. And, you know, again, I think it was just...
Again, I don't think this has anything to do with Buffalo.
You can't make excuses.
This is the last 5 or 6 weeks that he's upset about.
Maybe he was mad because he gave back that $24
million. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And he expected Wes Welker to be here when he did that.
We should just...
that one really gets under
PFW in progress update, even though it's old news.
Harbaugh lost like 30 pounds.
Nick Caserio under contract through 2020, reportedly.
Yeah.
Believed to be the longest front office contract in the NFL. And yet, another, I'd like to clear it up for other media, unless he is a moron who has the worst agent or lawyer in the history of the world, I don't believe this locks him up to New England. I got to think he has an out if he were given full power somewhere else for a promotion.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of people said, well, now you got one of them locked up, and now it's about... No, he's not locked up. If he wants to stay, he can stay.
Well, I was thinking
especially in this day and age when contracts don't mean anything anymore.
So you're the Patriots.
Word.
Casario's going to be desirable. Somebody's going to want it. Let's lock him up so we have his control. So now you package Josh McDaniels as a head coach, Casario as your GM, and you take all of the Raiders' picks for like the next 4 years.
I don't think that's legal.
Why not?
You can trade anything.
You can trade a coach.
You can trade a head coach.
Well, I think a GM is above that level.
Well, you're also trading an offensive coordinator. But I don't know that either of those are legal.
No, you're trading two guys, one to be a head coach and one to be a GM, which is above that level where...
I've never heard either of those things traded.
Well,
never heard of it doesn't mean the Patriots can't do it.
Well, plus he's not the GM on paper.
Oh, no, that's what I mean.
No, but he would be. On the new
job. But it's not what you're trading them to be. It's what they are.
Yeah, but I'm saying...
Teams would have traded sign-and-trade deals like the NBA? And if you're interested in my offensive coordinator, I'll trade him
to you. What if...
You're trying to cheat.
Well, no, to Fred's point, what if there's something in Casario's new contract that says we'll let you out of the deal if we can get a first-round pick from the team that you're going
to? And that gets to Andy's point that he has the worst agent around.
Then he has a bad agent.
Because no one's ever going to give him anything for that. So then his agent locked him in.
Well, the general rule is you
Patriots gave the Jets a first-round pick for Bill Belichick.
Yes, for a coach.
Because he was the head coach of the New York Jets.
But there's a lot of guys that would give it up for a coach. I wouldn't give it up for a front office guy.
Well, what if there's a team out there that really wants him and is willing to do that?
I think they might really want him, but they wouldn't give you anything for him
I don't
other
think,
than money.
It would be unprecedented. I don't think it's legal. I don't think it's allowed in the league.
This is where this gets back to our original argument. This is where if you have a guy like Mark Davis, who's a buffoon, who should should not be allowed in the building. I don't know how they would make that happen.
He looks like Richard Nixon when he said that.
He owns the building.
He should, yeah.
I am not a
somehow people should conspire to not allow him in. But here's
hostile takeover from within the organization.
Here's a way that, you know, if he thinks that they could do it, I got my GM, my coach, I can sit back and let them run the team for, and you know.
Do we know for sure that he's a buffoon? Like, I know he looks like a buffoon, and he's Al Davis' son.
I'm gonna go on a limb.
I've heard enough.
You look like that.
Yeah, I don't know, and it's probably unfair and unkind for me to say it because I don't have firsthand knowledge, but I've heard enough from other people who tell me that, yes.
I haven't heard one
person say, you know what, this guy's getting a bad shake. He's really, you know, he knows what he's doing.
But who's going to do that around here?
Why not?
Ron Borges would. He's got a long history of the Raiders and Al Davis.
If it was true, someone you would hear.
No,
it
but
someone.
I kind of agree with Fred. If he was being unduly criticized for his appearance, but he was really a bright guy, you don't think people would talk about that?
I think in this day and age, it's just easier, low hanging fruit. You make fun of the guy.
Yeah, but I think there would be someone out there to say, "You guys don't really know him. I know what he looks like, but you don't know him. No one does that."
You know, I make my pregame observations, and you guys laugh at them when they run the stairs, and I call it.
Oh, yeah, you would have been all over.
I watched this guy, Mark Davis, on the sideline before the game. And, you know, there's still guests down there and dignitaries and other executives. And they're all, you know, the important people because they're all in suits. So they're on the Raiders bench. It's the game this year.
I go the other way. And I think the real important people wear jeans if they want.
Listen,
You think it's ridiculous.
He's at the Raiders bench. And all these other people.
He wears a suit with a hat. That's what's ridiculous.
Forget it. All right, let's go on.
I feel your pain, Fred.
He's going to pull a Paul Perillo sulk and push the mic
let's
away.
Let's get to the phone call.
I can appreciate that.
Because we've got a lot of people that have been...
Fine, I just won't finish.
That have been hanging on here. John,
you can't even finish your story.
John's in Bourne. Hey, John.
My ball going
story for another time.
I don't even know where to start. Did you set the table, Fred, at the beginning of the show?
I did set the table, but I'm not exactly sure where.
Shut the table. Good thing you didn't shut the bed.
Well, I don't even know. I was calling up to talk about the playoffs, and then I had a comment about the front office. Now, you know, more on the topic of negativity. I went to the hall at Patriot Place, and yeah, there was a really nice place.
Presented by Raytheon.
But all I kept thinking of is the Super Bowl losses. So if we make it to the Super Bowl this year and lose, I'm going to be a little pissed. So,
well, yeah, it's tough. It's you're re-entering this place that you haven't had a good experience for the last two times, and it's tough.
And you're going back to the scene of the real crime,
the real bad one.
Yeah, you.
Well, that's the other thing.
But you can't be afraid, John. You can't be afraid.
Well, I dwell on the past. I still have that call of Manning lobs at Burris in the end zone, touchdown in my head. I get nightmares from that.
I understand, but there's only one way to, at least some way, not erase it, but alleviate that, and that's to go back and win it. And you're never, if you're afraid to go win, you'll never have that chance. You have to be strong.
Well, you really calm me down, Fred.
You have to accept the opportunity and go for it without reservation.
So to win a Super Bowl, you have to have balls and go all in. To hire a coach, you got to be scared and wait a year. It's the same thing.
No,
you're
it's
trying
not the same
to
thing.
Get it right. You're trying to win a game. Okay. You have one chance.
It's the same process.
It is the same exact thing. It's the exact same thing.
You're
yes,
wrong.
You can say no. I can say yes. We can keep going back and forth if you want.
Oh, but this year I feel really different because the last two Super Bowl years, it was really about our offense and, you know, the last Super Bowl, the defense was really just beaten up with, Edelman playing or Slater. But this year, I feel a lot more confident with the defense. I know we can get off the field. And
you should feel more confident. Absolutely.
You look at the last one. Patriots scored 17 points, but the defense just was never getting off the field, and field position was awful. And
All right.
It would be depressing if we lost, but I'm not saying I feel more confident than the 07 season, but, you know, I got a 65-inch TV at the beginning of this year, and I hope I'm not going to throw it on the ground this February. So,
oh, don't do that.
You will regret that.
Yeah,
do
there's always March that. Madness coming up after that. Yes. You don't want to do that.
Porn.
Yeah, porn.
This is a football town, Fred.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Have a good day, guys.
Okay. Thanks, John.
You know how you always tell me that porn is on the cutting edge or like the forefront
of technology? Yeah.
Is there Ultra HD porn yet?
Are they filming in Ultra HD? I don't know. Those are expensive.
Wait, but
cameras.
You can't play it, right?
If you have an Ultra HD TV.
But oh, no, what, how would you play
Ultra
you
have HD?
The converter box, you mean?
No, but
I. oh, it's one of those things
like pornography. You know it when you see it or hear it.
There's blue. Are Blu-ray and Ultra HD the same or
no?
No,
I don't believe so. No.
So I don't know that there are Ultra HD.
You're telling me there's a
DVD?
There's a clearer HD
oh,
than
it's
HD?
Phenomenal. Flipping, go to BJ's. It's.
I would love to.
Oh, it's orgasmic.
Speaking of which, they do jack those TVs up though. So they have,
oh yeah.
You know, when they're on display.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. No question.
Let's go to John in North Carolina. Hey, John.
It's millions of pixels clearer, or
really?
Billions, or ten. I don't know.
Thanks for holding on, John. What's up?
Yeah. You know, I'm watching a lot of games, and the offensive line is the problem. It's not even hard to figure out. And I'm kind of angry because Belichick said at the beginning of the year, if you'll recall, before the season started, that they had a wealth of riches at that position.
You're right. They dealt Mankins from an abundance of talent for fill a spot where they didn't. You're
That's
right.
A good
Dead
point.
On. Well yep. done, John.
All right, thank you. And then the other thing is...
I'm surprised.
Stunned him with that.
Yeah, I did. Usually you're an idiot, but this one is well thought out.
Remember Melvin Ingram had the time of his life against the Patriots?
Yep.
I recall.
They have a finesse offense this year. And Melvin Ingram on the San Diego Chargers had the game of his life. I watched him the game after against the 49ers. They ran right at him, and they ran him over, and he was still planted in the turf after the play. I saw it, and they did it several times. And he was a non-factor in the game. He did nothing. He had two assisted tackles and nothing else. No rushes, no hurries. I mean, because they were their offense and their fullback and their tight ends just ran right over the guy.
Yes, Melvin Ingram is not as good as he looked against the Patriots. He is not because he looked like J.J. Watt or something against the Patriots.
Exactly.
He's not that good. He's not a terrible player. You know, they didn't make a practice squatter look good. They made a good player look great.
My point is that. The Patriots are going to have trouble with physical defenses from here on out.
Yes.
And that's what they got to look forward to.
And that has been the track record forever. Remember last year? Who did they have trouble with? It was the Bengals. It was the Panthers. It was the, I don't know, give me a couple more, Paul.
Yeah.
They had a history.
All the teams with physical defenses.
When they have physical fronts, the Jets, consistently. Those are the teams that give this team problems. There's no doubt that is part of it.
And now the team that they want to avoid now is the Ravens. They can beat the other teams because they're finesse offenses. Finesse defenses, basically. But
the difference is the defense. Remember, we're focusing on the positive here today. And now maybe when your offense only scores 16 or 17, maybe the defense held the Ravens to 10 or 14 and you win.
Right, it will have to be like the Jets game. It's going to have to be like the Jets game, I think, if they play the Ravens.
But you could win.
Yeah, because
you got a defense. Because Flacco's not that good. That offense isn't that good, and the Patriots' defense is good. They don't allow points in the second half. They're a top-10 scoring defense.
And that's what you'd have to hope that continues, because I think it's really only the Colts and Pittsburgh that have those finesse defenses. I think the other teams play pretty tough, pretty physically on defense. So I think if you saw Cincinnati or Baltimore or Denver, I think you have a chance that could happen and you could be in one of those games.
Of course, the Colts
in the low 20s.
Have offenses that can put a lot of points
in. We seem to have a way to beat Denver. I'm not afraid of Denver.
Well, I didn't say you had to be afraid of anybody, but, I mean, they play good defense.
Well, I'm afraid of the you watch the Seahawks and then look what their defensive line would do against us. I mean, their defensive line is physical.
So if you think if the Seahawks played their best game, would they beat the Patriots if they played their best game?
I think by about 30 points. I don't even think. I think it'll.
Wow.
I think it'll be a Super Bowl blowout if we have to pay the.
Just so you know, this just in. You don't think the Patriots are very good?
Yeah.
Well, not in the offensive line.
Well, because the Seahawks don't beat everybody by 30 points.
They don't beat anybody.
Offensive line
really
doesn't play defense.
No.
Oh, I just can't see us stopping. Keeping anybody off the quarterback if we play them.
Well, they don't actually have a ton of sacks. You know, it's another one of those things where you go by this. The stats can be deceiving.
They just don't give up a lot of yards after
the
catch.
They're extremely good defensively. Obviously, right. They don't give up any points.
Right.
But
which is
they're good. They're a middle of the pack team when it comes to flat out pressure. You know, at least in terms of sacks. I don't know what the pressure and those kinds of numbers talk. How where they stand on that. But
I like the Patriots' chances. If they played their best against the Seahawks' best, I think it would be a great game.
I think
it would
be a great game.
And yeah. I like New England's chances.
Let's go to Melvin in Tennessee. Hey, Melvin.
Hey, what's going on, y'all?
Hey.
Man, I'm just making a real quick point. This is, I guess, just Drew Brees and himself. So this is off topic, but I still want to talk about it. Drew Brees himself, I feel like that, although throughout these years, he's kind of, ever since the Super Bowl, he's kind of went down a little bit. But nobody really seems to discredit him or attack him like they do the Brady and the Manning and even, you know, not even a Jay Cutler or something like that. But they were bad this year. I feel like, and he turns the ball over a lot. Mm. So I was just, like, kind of thinking about that, you know, that everybody loves to throw Drew Brees and the Tom Brady's with the Peyton Manning's when it, you know, when you think about the yardage thrown and stuff like that.
This is one of my favorite calls ever. It is so utterly disrespectful to Peyton Manning and Tom Brady that Drew Brees is considered to be one of them because he had a couple of statistically good seasons and won one Super Bowl. Manning did it for 15 years. I know he only won one Super Bowl, too, but he didn't just have a couple of good years with New Orleans. And a lot of his good years are like this year. Statistically, he's up around 5,000 yards and, you know, throwing the ball all over the place. He has a lot of seasons that are similar to this. I don't think Brees is anywhere near the other three because I put Rodgers with Brady and Manning. I don't put Brees with him. And I think you want to get even further into that, Melvin, go check out his home road splits and see, you know, everybody makes fun of Manning for not being able to play in bad weather. Go check out Drew Brees on the road anywhere. Never mind bad weather.
He just won one playoff game away or something like that. If they're not in that dome, he gets so average, it's not even funny.
And this year, they wasn't even good there, so.
Exactly.
Yeah, I hear that because it was always Manning, Brady, Brees, and Rodgers.
Yeah, Brees is good. He's not great like those other two.
Thanks, Melvin. We got to move on. Eldridge is from North Carolina. We'll take your call, and then we'll take a break. What's up, Eldridge?
Hey, fellas. How y'all doing?
Good.
Love the show as usual. But, Fred, you got to hire a coach right away, man, because you got to think about the OTA, weight room, you know, then you got all the other stuff. Then hopefully, you know, can't wait a year, man.
So no matter what, you got to hire that coach.
You got to hire that coach.
You got to hire a coach. And what you're missing, Fred, is the coaching, in your mind, the coaching search.
I didn't say we're going to shut down for the year.
No. But in your, well, you kind of are. But in your mind, the coaching search probably began in October, November. You know, unless you're making a really bad rush to judgment because he lost three games in December, you should have been making that decision all along.
And why can't you spend a year while you have your head coach in place looking for that other candidate so that when
that didn't work out for the no.
What do you mean? Quietly. He didn't say contact.
You have to be very quiet.
You're observing.
Out, you know, it's really
No. I'm not saying you have to make contact even with the guy, but if you observe, you ask around to other people, you do your homework.
You know, like you don't say, I'm looking for a coach in a year. What do you think of Urban Meyer? You know, you happen to go to a game if you're Robert Kraft. Hasn't he been to like some Urban Meyer games or college games?
Yeah, he's gone to college.
And you know, you're just asking. You know,
right?
You just have to be very careful about
how
that.
Is he with alumni? Because he's really impressive, and I think you can pull it off without
absolutely you can
without saying
we're looking for a head coach.
Year, right?
Yeah. Don't tell anybody. Ixnay.
Yeah.
Andy. Yes. I liked it at Xbox post game show the other day when we talked a little bit. You said he wasn't evident. I didn't get to see the game, but couldn't be evident because I didn't get to see it. But the one call that you was talking to, I think his name was John Paul. What he was saying was it wasn't
the Pope,
our
John Paul.
Line. It wasn't the our defensive line against the Ravens defensive line. What he was saying is there's three guys on the defensive line with the Ravens.
Yes. I got what he was saying. I figured that out.
The offensive line up the way they're playing now.
Yeah, I just don't think that will happen. That's all.
Well, I hope not. That's my only concern is that offensive line. And if we go play Seattle,
the Patriots have played like something like four or five of the top eight teams in football in terms of sacks, and they haven't often gotten ripped apart over the last 3 months of the season. So. I'm kind of with Eric. I think that things will get straightened out in the postseason. I don't think it will be that bad. I don't look at it. Listen, that's what's happened to them in the postseason is they've lost control of the line of scrimmage. If they lose in the playoffs, that's probably going to be why. I don't think it's going to happen until the Super Bowl.
All right.
Think they're going to win in the AFC playoffs.
All right, let's take a break right now. We've been going at it strong. When we come back, more of your calls and emails here in PFW in progress.
Hey, what kind of sub is that?
It's the Subway Big Hot Pastrami.
Subway Big Hot Pastrami?
No, pastrami.
Pastrami!
What? Hey, get back here! Pastrami!
No, pastrami!
Look, it's the Subway Big Hot Pastrami!
Want to split it?
A little late for that.
Get your own Subway Big Hot Pastrami Melt, a monument of flavor loaded with dry rub, pepper-crusted beef, and melty cheese. Enjoy yours with mustard and pickles. Subway, eat fresh.
Limited time only at participating restaurants.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or tri-corner hats, maple syrup or Walden Woods. They now think of dominance. The success of the sleeveless hoodie. Three Super Bowl championships, AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years, the first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots, our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our declaration of allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Arizona. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square, across from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time, 2% cash back on groceries, and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Xbox One is not only a game console, but the home entertainment system every fantasy football fan needs. The NFL on Xbox One is your connection to all things fantasy, giving you personalized news, highlights, stats, and scores instantly on your TV. Watching your favorite team play on Sunday, but wondering how your fantasy players are doing? With built-in fantasy football, track your updates on TV in real time across NFL.com fantasy leagues, all while still watching live games. Xbox One, bringing fantasy football to your TV. Now available for $349 at a Microsoft store near you.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go.
Go. That's it. Come on. Kick it into hyperdrive. Touchdown!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call ** NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime message and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
And now, great moments in PFW in progress history.
Have you ever had a lobster bisque?
I have not.
You don't know from soup, then, if you haven't had one.
You don't know from soup.
You don't know from
is it a soup?
Every once in a while, it turns into that 1955 character.
Lobster bisque.
Then why isn't it called lobster soup?
But you have a good lobster biscuit just...
Because it's a stew, a soup, or is it
no
a stew?
Soup for you.
It's like sex for your
is
throat.
Is a chowder a soup? Eric already has sex for his throat.
Fred, why do you do this?
I had nothing to do with you.
Yes, you did.
That's another great moment from PFW in Progress.
All right, back here in PFW in Progress, 508-298-0398 is the Ace Ticket Hotline, web radio at patriots.com. Kevin, who was... nice enough to get us lunch today.
Today was our good friend Pat Nagawam.
Pat Nagawam.
Nice job, Pat.
Thanks.
Pat,
thanks
Pat's coming up big.
Yeah.
Big.
Thank you very much. So, good. Bad Kevin writes in, okay, so 40 minutes on a topic that has absolutely nothing to do with the Patriots.
That is true. We're guilty of that.
I get it that Josh may be gone, but I can tell you that I am very glad Fred is not the owner of the team I root for. Let me tell you that I am very glad that we will not have to play the Steelers in the divisional round of the playoffs. They scare the hell out of me. Fred mentioned earlier that we had only not played the Ravens, and I know he meant that they were the team that we can play next that we haven't played. We have not played the Steelers. If the Steelers get healthy on defense before they play us, I think we are in trouble. I was rooting my ass off for them on Sunday night. Do you guys agree with this, or is there another team that scares you more than Pittsburgh? As Fred has said, Manning is done, so the Broncos don't scare us at all. Or do we have nothing to worry about until we play Seattle or Green Bay in the Super Bowl? And to be honest with you, I am not scared of Green Bay. We only lost by 5 in Lambeau. Curious on your thoughts. Okay, now it's been 45 minutes on this BS topic that has nothing to do with the Patriots. So he emailed in while we were still arguing. But, I mean, people are just really scared of the Ravens and the Steelers.
I wouldn't say scared is the word I would use. I mean, I would have concerns in certain areas, but I wouldn't be scared to face anybody.
No. No. Here in Foxborough?
Yeah, Eric nailed it. No, yeah. I mean, I don't think anybody's afraid of anybody. I don't know why you'd be afraid.
Right.
But there are teams that you would rather not face if you have a choice, and I think teams that are physically tough and mentally tough would fall into that category. I think Baltimore is one of them. I don't think the Patriots have any problem at all beating them because I don't think they can score enough to win. But it doesn't mean that I would rather play them than Indianapolis or Cincinnati.
I don't think when people think about that, they obviously are thinking about the Steelers and the Ravens' defense. But remember the Patriots' defense this year. The Patriots have a different defense that they've had in past years.
But those are two different things. The Steelers have no defense. The Ravens have an excellent one.
But I think, like he just said, if the Steelers' defense gets healthy, we're in big trouble.
Yeah, but they're not.
Right, and they, even when they weren't that good this year.
They haven't been healthy this year. Yeah,
well,
but they're not just going to magically be healthy right. In a playoff game.
So it's not like the Steelers have this. They don't have the defense you think of when you think of the Steelers. You know, so I don't know.
I don't think that's why people fear Pittsburgh. People fear Pittsburgh because of their weapons on offense.
I worry more about Denver than I do any other team left
there's
in the
no
AFC.
Question.
I do too.
There's no. That's not even close.
I do too.
Yeah. Shaban writes in, I've been reading articles that lack of momentum can be a problem for the Patriots, but I think differently. Bill will have this team ready to come game time. I have one question. Is it just me, or does this team always make a big play when they need one? They always come through when the games are on the line, especially on defense.
Yeah, they have been this year.
Yeah, they seem
to. Do you worry about that?
Not always. But
see, I worry about that a little bit because they have been incredibly good at that all year long, and then all of a sudden what happens if you don't get it?
Oh, sure. You don't want to have – that's again, this goes back to the whole I want a competitive game and I want to dominate. I don't need fourth quarter excitement when it comes to the Patriots.
But again, I don't think that's what Andy was arguing in that.
I want the Patriots to be so much better than all the rest of the league that I don't have to worry about it.
I think he was saying that too, but he wanted the opponent to be good coming into the game.
They could be good against everyone else.
That's what he was saying.
But we're still dominant.
I think that's exactly what he was saying.
Yeah.
In that argument.
He did it again. He completely changed his argument after the fact.
No.
At least it wasn't me that got victimized this time.
No. Let's see. Alex writes in, I was wondering why Tom Brady's poor postseason isn't brought up before the playoffs. We constantly rip Andy Dalton, Peyton Manning, for their awful postseason history, but never hear a word about TB12's struggles in the playoffs. I feel people gloss over the offense scoring only 16 in Denver in 2013 and 10 against Baltimore 2012. In 2010, Brady was awful against the Jets coming off an MVP year. There should be plenty of articles and stories coming out now detailing the cold, hard truth. Tom Brady is not clutch anymore. When Brady plays poorly in the regular season, Paul coined the phrase playoff Brady. Well, the Boston.com had a big story about playoff Brady today.
Yeah, so they did. I saw that.
I think it's fair.
I thought Paul wrote it, actually.
Oh, no, I think kidding. It's fair to bring it up. I mean, I think we do that with all other quarterbacks,
sure.
Teams.
Who wrote that? I didn't see
it. I forgot.
That.
Yeah, it was in the clips today.
Was this not in the paper?
No, it was on Boston.com.
No. So no one saw it.
I mean, I don't know if they got it from the paper. Do you
remember? I don't remember who's. I don't.
Yeah, it was like, you know, they're
I'm just curious as to who wrote it because I'm stunned. Yeah. I kind of, you know, I was kind of skeptical of the email because I'm like, you know, who around here is going to write that story is what I was thinking. So hats off to Boston.com.
But I think it's fair to bring it up. I mean, we do that with all other teams and quarterbacks, you know, what happens in big games and, you know.
Did it to Manning for years.
Cincinnati, you know, obviously, you know, they've got a history of folding
games. I'm actually working on my commentary heading into the bye week. And it's basically, that's what it's about. It's about doing it in January. And, you know, Andy Dalton, the start of Andy Dalton's career would be something that I think a lot of quarterbacks would envy. He's won a lot more games than he's lost, throws more touchdowns, his passer rating is, you know, average, like 85, you know, as a second-round pick. But what do you talk about when you talk about Andy Dalton?
Right.
The playoffs.
0-3, right? And you're right to talk about that. He has melted down in the playoffs. Tony Romo, same thing, you know, and much better, much higher level because he's been much better than Andy Dalton as a regular season quarterback. But all anybody wants to talk about is 1-4 or whatever he is in the playoffs. Conversely, Tom Brady won his first 10 playoff games. So no one talks about the fact that he's 9-9 in the ensuing 18 or whatever the number is up to now. I haven't checked it. Peyton Manning, the opposite. All this regular season numbers, but he should have won more than one because it took him so long to get the one that people still look at him as a, you know, a choking dog. That's the perception that you deal with as a quarterback. You know, in the playoffs, it's about what you do in January. And Brady had the fortune of doing well first.
Right.
So anything that happens now, he's not considered to be a choker.
He's done it.
Because he's already proven that he can do it.
Right.
So that's the difference.
But I also think, you know, getting back to what we were talking about earlier, the other difference now is when he did do it, he had that defense to fall back on. It wasn't all about him. And now he's back to that. So let's hope that things are a little different than the last two times.
And I think
what we
talked about to start the season, I think has played out pretty much according to the script. We said, for the most part, I think you'd agree, Paul, if Gronk, Revis, and Brady were healthy for the entire year, they'd be at least a Super Bowl contender, if not the number one seed. And that we were concerned about the offensive line going lasting, or who they were going to be. That was going to be the Achilles heel, I think we thought. And throughout the season, that's borne fruit, I think. When the offensive line was steady and healthy, they had their best run, as we saw. Now that things have gotten a little bit uncertain the last few weeks, we've seen how that's affected the offense. And Brady and Gronk and Revis have been healthy and been who we thought they were. And look where they are. They're the number one seed again. So yeah. I don't have as much concern as most people are about what they've seen the last month or so, because I think there's plenty of time for it to fix itself, and they're healthy. They're as healthy as I couldn't expect them to be any more healthy than they are overall, than they are right now. I think they're in great position going into next week.
Let's go to Dana in Connecticut. Hey, Dana.
Oh, God, thanks, Fred, for taking my call. How are you doing, Eric and Andy and
good.
Paul?
Andy had to leave. If you at the end of the show, if you turn to EEI, okay. That's where he'll be.
Okay, great. I'm coming out of my skin here. I got a couple comments and one question. The comments are, I'm going to start off by taking a quote from Aaron Rodgers. Relax, fellas. I know the offensive line is the Achilles heel, but we haven't had a defense like this since the early 2000s. We got balance on offense. Everybody's panicking. The O-line will pull it together. I mean, we have Josh Klein going up against three Pro Bowlers this week. So, of course, you know, the scenario doesn't look good. The Jets always play us tough. So forget those two games. We're going to win by 30, 40 points in the first playoff game. I don't care who we play. Pittsburgh's a threat offensively, but their defense is terrible. We'll destroy the Ravens. I was worried about them, but I saw them. I'm not impressed. We'll score at will against them. They can't. No one's going to. No, there's only one threat going to the Super Bowl, and it's Denver. And it's a big threat, but they're the only threat.
See, I kind of agree.
Offense.
Yeah.
Their offense is you know, people are counting them out. Forget about it. Pittsburgh's offense is good. Roethlisberger could have a night, but I don't see it happening. I don't see them coming in there and beating us. We're going to the Super Bowl. We're going to win the next two games. The offensive line will be an issue if we go up against Seattle and Seattle only. Other than that, I don't see us losing, guys. That's my comment. The other thing is I want to know what's going on. And the other thing is McDaniel, I'm sorry, guys. I don't get it. I'm not impressed with him. I wasn't impressed with him the first round. I wasn't impressed with him as a head coach, and I'm not impressed with him this year. I think he overthinks. He gets cute on the goal line, throws when he doesn't need to throw. Line up Devlin and just run the ball when you need to. And let's go jumbo package with Fleming and run the ball. You know, let's not get cute. That's all I have to say about him. And the question I have, I'm sorry I'm rambling, but I've been holding on for a while. Is have we seen the last of Denard? Is he history, guys? Or what are we hearing on that?
You mean career-wise?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I like him. I really, really like him as a cornerback. And I'm afraid he's in the Chateau Valois or he's something's going on there. I mean,
yeah.
I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't. I was.
Thanks for the call, Dana.
I was a little surprised by the way his season played out,
is
too.
Is it possible
because
that he was just never healthy all year?
Well, if that were the case, he should have been on the injury report, Fred. He was a healthy scratch.
Because it's a big puzzle because I really thought, you know, once they got Browner, boy, that was just going to just make the
quality. He was going to be the third cornerback.
Better.
Yeah,
was,
I know.
You know,
he got beat out by a rookie who has had his struggles.
Right.
So, I don't know. I think he'll be back at least for springtime and maybe training camp, but I think it'll be tough for him to win a job if it continues on this track.
Yeah, that goes down on the list of questions that you'd like answers to once Bill Belichick retires.
Yeah, and I also
whatever
think,
happened to Alfonso Dennett in 2014.
I'd like them before he retires.
Right. And you know, and the whole future thing I think could be tied to Revis too, because if you bring Revis back, I don't really see the need to bring Dennett back. Just move on with a younger guy.
Yeah.
But if you lose Revis, now you're back to we need as many bodies as we can get to figure it out.
Greg's in San Francisco. Hey, Greg.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good.
Long time listener, first time caller. I think I've been listening to you guys for 5 years, man. You guys do an awesome job.
Thanks.
Just had two quick things, two quick questions. First, Brady just restructured his contract to put $24 million back on the table for them to spend however they want to spend it. Do you think that there was also like a subtle maybe message to Revis to say, look, you know, this is what I'm doing to win. Maybe you should think about that too. Think there's something like that in that?
No,
I don't either. Unless it, you know, because Brady actually got more money, and I'm sure that Revis would be happy to take more money if he wanted to give it to him. Fred mapped it all out really well before the break. Brady got an additional $3 million to agree to not have the last 3 years of his deal guaranteed.
Mm-hmm.
He sacrifices nothing.
Right.
Because
right.
The fact that it's not guaranteed now, if he doesn't get it, it means he's going to get it somewhere else.
Yeah.
And that's actually beneficial to him because now he can pick and choose where he goes. If the team wants to cut him, he can go somewhere and make that money. This gives them an extra $24 million immediately to use. It doesn't give them additional cap space to use it, though.
Right.
So,
yeah,
you know,
it's cap space.
This is more of a clerical thing.
It is
than anything else. I think people are really
because to have a
overstating the importance of this.
Guaranteed for skill, you have to have the cash available at that moment
in escrow.
Right?
Yeah, it has to sit in escrow.
Now they don't need to do that, so they
correct.
Can,
sort of work out getting deals done for other players because they'll have that available to them. It's not a cap number, though.
Yep.
Okay. Right.
Thanks, Greg. Thanks for calling. Let's go to Olivier in Virginia. Hey, Olivier.
So much for Olivier.
Olivier.
Did I just? I did not.
You must have hung up on him.
I did? I thought I hit air. Come on. No, that wasn't me. I will admit.
I saw it disappear as soon as you clicked the button. I can't see what button
Olivia,
you're
hitting. Olivia, call right back. I hit the right button.
Maybe he hung up.
Fat thumbs.
Chris in Miami. Hey, Chris.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Hey.
Hey, I'm pretty sick of everybody telling me about the Ravens, Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, Denver, all these people, all these things. If you see three of them, we already blew out. The Ravens, Cincinnati have beat them twice, and Cincinnati, we blew them out. And Denver, everybody, C.J. Anderson, we don't need paying many as full potential. But guess what? If you get down 15 points, 14 points, you're not going to be able to run the ball. You get me? I feel the only thing that we really need to be afraid of, and that will be in the Super Bowl, it will be the Cowboys because of the fact that they can run and they can pass. And Des Bryant is a big boy. And I think Rivers, I don't know, I think Rivers will have a little tough time going against Des Bryant. But that Denver thing is over. I don't think Denver can beat the Patriots. There's too many things that's going on there, and I feel that we haven't shown them absolutely anything these last couple of weeks.
That is a thing, though, you know, with Denver. And like I said, I still believe they're the biggest threat to the Patriots. But if the Patriots get a lead, it's over with Denver. I really do think that. Here at home, I think it's over.
Certainly you don't want to play from behind against the Patriots.
Yeah.
I would agree with that.
But
thanks, Chris.
But I'll just say this. I don't count Manning out. I think he can make it a competitive game. I mean, you could be up 21 points to him, and he can make it a competitive game.
That's his history, but I don't know about right now.
Yeah, I don't think it would be like that in the playoffs.
I also don't think that just because you blew a team out once in the regular season.
Oh, no, that I don't. I heard that.
Yeah.
I don't believe that.
Matchups are all different. I mean, how
all
many
have
of those
to do is talk about the Jets?
How many? Yeah, I was going to say that. How many of those teams blew the Jets out?
Right.
Or even just look at
Little life and death with the Jets. I mean, matchups are funny.
It's all about matchups.
Well, just to take the example of the Jets, not this year's Jets, but the year that the Patriots lost to the Jets in the playoffs.
And
they blew them out a month earlier.
Right.
52 to whatever the hell, whatever
45 the score. 45-3.
45-3, yeah. And then they lost to them less than a month later in the playoffs. So.
And handily.
Yeah.
Okay, Olivier's back on. Sorry about that, Olivier.
Hey, Merry Christmas, guys.
How you doing?
Joyeux Noël.
Thank you. It's the first time I get fat fingered by someone.
hopefully the last, Olivia.
I was calling. I'm super happy we finally are done with our season, our regular season, because the last two, three games haven't been really pretty, and they've been really concerning, especially from an O-line perspective. So I was wondering, what do you think that, of course, they can practice, they can do a lot of different things in permutation, but we can't afford, obviously, to keep on playing that way if we want Brady to start, you know, producing and putting points on the board. So have you seen anything, have you heard anything that would suggest that, obviously, they are working on it and maybe doing some roster moves and signing? What about Incognito?
No. I wouldn't want anything to do with him under any circumstances. He's an overrated player to begin with, so I don't think
he
would help.
He's got no talent, forget it.
No. The only thing I think is a good sign is that they had everybody on the O-line at practice. Everyone who's been hurt was at practice. Connolly, Vollmer, Solder, all those guys had missed time because of injury, and they were all practicing. That, to me, is the best sign because, like I said earlier, when they got their starting five, when they decided on the five, and that was going to be Solder, Connolly, Stork in the middle, Wendell at right guard, and Vollmer. When they had that starting five in place for whatever it was, five, seven games, however long the stretch was.
It
was better. It was the best that they'd been all season, and that also happened to be when the Patriots were playing at their best offensively. So, to me, it comes down to that. If they can get those five healthy again in time for next weekend, I think you'll see things settle down along the front there.
And these guys must be healthy for the next three or four games. I think three games, because we cannot afford to have one at third because we don't have any depth behind them.
No quality depth, that's for sure. Yeah. They have players, but they don't have anybody I'm confident in.
Well, we only need them for three games.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. They don't need to be perfect. They just need to be good enough. Now,
and I think the other, Olivier, if you just let me jump in for a quick second, thing that I really agree with most of our callers and what Fred and Eric and Andy have been talking about, unlike in the past, if you do happen to lose the line of scrimmage, if the Achilles heel becomes an Achilles heel in a playoff game, you're not done. You can still win the game now.
Not on Brady's shoulder.
It's because if the offense only scores 14 or 17, you can still win, depending on who you play and how well you play defensively. Whereas whatever many years you want to go back, 07,
right?
At least 06. If you didn't score more than, say, 24, see ya. You will get knocked out of a playoff.
It was that last
game.
Possession. Can the Patriots get that other team off the field in that last possession? And they weren't able to do that in the big game.
Yeah, I just think it was. To me, it's more about the amount of points you score, too. That's true, what you just said. They haven't been able to get that stop at the end of the game in those situations. But if they couldn't score more than 24, you know, look, the Jets game was, you know, was over. They couldn't score that. They couldn't score against the Ravens either time they lost to the Ravens. The Giants, the two Super Bowls, there's a common denominator, and it's you couldn't score the points that you normally did, and you didn't have any other way to win the game. Now I think they have another way to win the game.
With a defense like we have right now, Paul, do you think that we win those two Super Bowls that we lost?
I think they would have won both Super Bowls.
I agree with you.
If the defense played the way it's played this year.
Browner or Revis instead of Ellis Hobbs in the end zone, game over.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Absolutely
agreed.
Well, especially the second one, because you wouldn't have let the other team possess the ball for 40 minutes and let Eli Manning go 30 for 40.
Right.
You know, everybody only wants to talk about the score of the game, and they don't want to, you know, talk about how it got to that score. The Giants absolutely controlled that game from start to finish. And the fact that it was as close as it was, to me, was a testament to Belichick and everything that the Patriots' toughness and everything that they've sort of become known for. They stuck around in that game and had a chance to win it only because of their incredible toughness. They got controlled in that
Edelman
game.
Instead of Welker, he makes the catch.
Oh,
amen.
I'm only kidding. I love Wes.
Because Edelman never drops.
Before I go, are you going to be there tomorrow?
What's that?
Are you going to be there tomorrow?
Yeah, we'll be here tomorrow.
Yeah.
All right, I'll buy lunch.
Oh!
Hey, Merry New Year!
Hey! All right, guys, I'll talk
all
to
right.
you tomorrow.
All right, Olivier, coming through. Big
That's
time.
Big.
Yeah.
And the year with a bang.
Is tomorrow media lunch, though?
Probably.
Oh, yeah. Let me check.
Kevin, you can coordinate with him. Media lunch tomorrow, you coordinate with
it is Olivier.
11:45.
So coordinate with Olivier and have him do it another day.
You don't have to do that, but,
you know, if you wanted to do it another day.
Larry's in Worcester. Hey, Larry.
Hi, how are you
that
doing?
That was my
Happy
temper
tantrum.
Good. No. Happy New Year to you.
Yep. Everybody's talking about these close and competitive games they want to see. And I
know. Can I just interrupt for a second, Larry?
Yeah.
This is a semantic argument that Fred has taken completely out of context from Andy. Andy's not here.
I know.
So I'm going to just speak on Andy's behalf. No one wants to win the game close instead of by a lot. What Andy is saying is that he would rather play teams that are really, really good and then beat them, not really, really bad.
And what I'm saying is I don't care how they play against each other. All I care about is when we play them.
But no one is saying I'd rather win by one than 40. Yeah, everybody would rather win by 40.
Nobody.
Everybody.
Okay, yeah. The one memory I have of my father and I watching the Bruins, because we used to watch it all the time, back Bobby Orr days, when they had double lane skates. We were playing Montreal. We were up in the series 3-2. We were up in the game in Montreal. You couldn't hear the announcers for the whistling of the crowd, which is booing up there. And we were up in the game like 6-1, 6-3, 6-2, something like that. My father says, in the second period, well, I wish it was a little more competitive. We lost the game. We lost the series. We lost the Stanley Cup. I couldn't believe it. And I have never wanted to see another competitive game in my life.
There you go.
Yeah, I always want my team to win by as many in their particular game. But the larger point that Andy was trying to make was that he would rather beat good teams by a lot than, you know, the bad teams.
Yeah, and again, I really don't care what they do when they're not playing us.
You ask your dad about that game, that series. He'll remember it. He was a...
What year was it, 71?
No, it might have been 70, 71, something like that. It's a little before your time.
They lost in seven games in 71 to Ken Dryden.
All right, thanks, Larry. Let's see.
I'm not like Andy. Even things that happened before my time, I know of.
Tom,
as long as it's sports-related. If it's anything important at all, I don't know anything about it.
Tom in Baltimore says, I am so fired up with all this talk about fearing the Ravens.
No one is fearing anybody.
No, people have said
Some
that,
people
Paul.
Have said that.
That's the
yeah.
team that they least want to see.
But people have said I fear them. People have used those
all
words.
All right, fine.
I'm from Baltimore, and I was able to see every game along with the Patriots games. I'm telling you, this now, if we play the Ravens, it would be close. The Ravens are not that I think he meant it wouldn't be close, but he says, I'm telling you this now, if we play the Ravens, it would be close. The Ravens are not that good. They played a weak AFC, NFC South, along with being 1-6 against playoff teams this year. Give me Revis versus Smith Jr. and Browner on Torrey with McCourty. And
those numbers are wrong.
And we take away Joe Flacid's main weapons. Our offense will go up-tempo to negate the Ravens' pass rush. Patriots Nation, we should not fear anyone. Everyone needs to fear us. I'm for that. Right there.
They were not 1-6 against playoff teams.
No?
No. The Panthers had the worst record, I believe. I read that to you when we were doing the show.
I wasn't listening.
Okay.
Let's see.
But I don't fear the Ravens either. That part of it, I don't know of anybody who fears the Ravens. I've seen people say, I would rather not face them because they're a physically tough team, and that sort of doesn't match up well. I haven't heard anybody say they fear the Ravens. If you guys say that people have said they're afraid of them, then sure. I'll take your word for it.
TG and NJ, is the wide receiver group good enough to go the distance? I just feel we don't have the depth or talent to match up with the remaining teams in the playoffs. We are going to need some help to pull this off. Defense, turnovers, mistakes by the opponent. Can the run game make up for the lack of a passing game? I have this terrible feeling we will get knocked out by Pittsburgh. Friggin' playoffs, no good for the health of the internal organs.
Yeah, just relax. Like Rogers said.
Wow,
just
relax. Yeah. I mean, aren't we all happy that Brandon LaFell has turned into a legitimate third option here?
Everything has gone well for this team this year. They're the number one seed. All three of their stars are playing at a high level. They're healthy. They have a week off. LaFell turned into the best case scenario that people had for him. What more do you want? You're predicting doom? This is the best setup they've had since 2007.
Right.
I think the Ravens, just off the top of my head, are 2-4.
2-4
against playoff teams. So they're not. I agree with the emailer's overall premise. They're not that good. They have a good defense. Their offense has not been able to score.
Well coached.
I think they're well coached. And I think that that's a big part of why people respect them is because they've seen them in the playoffs in the past. They go on the road and they win playoff games. That's not easy to do. They've done it more than anybody.
Jonas in D.C., I view the Casario extension the same way the new bride views her wedding night. I knew it was coming. I just didn't expect it to be so long. Wish Andy was around for that one. Paul didn't like that joke.
No, I was saying you wish Andy was.
No, Andy would probably rip it because he was like, well, who waits for their wedding night nowadays? I mean, their wedding night, it's over. You're exhausted. I mean, you've all day planning. I mean, you've been sleeping together for months now anyway.
I was trying to be Andy with the little sophomoric laugh.
But you didn't think it was funny at all.
I didn't really get it.
Oh, okay. You know it's coming. You didn't think
we knew that
long.
Casario was getting extended.
He probably knew. I don't know.
Well, that's part of what I didn't get. That's all I'm explaining. I mean, I think he worked really hard to get his joke about the wedding night in there, but it didn't really fit.
Yeah, yeah.
Gareth and
I didn't see the need to beat up on the poor guy. Like you have to illustrate for everybody.
Gareth in Belfast, Northern Ireland. Since there's no game to talk about this week, I have a question that I'd be interested in hearing your thoughts on. If you could swap Gronk and Revis for any two players from any other team, would you? If so, who would you swap them for? This assumes that the rest of the roster is exactly the same. Off the top of my head, the only swaps I would possibly consider would be for Megatron in Sue or Von Miller in Demaryius Thomas.
Sue? No way.
See, I know you're going to kill me, but I would take Luck and T.Y. Hilton.
Why would you do that?
Because I've got a quarterback for the future now.
You're going to
put him
on the bench?
But you already have a great quarterback.
You have the quarterback.
And you've taken away a weapon.
Yeah.
I wouldn't make that swap.
I wouldn't make that swap.
If you're going to keep my roster the same as it is, and I'm just adding two guys, I could make arguments for like Calvin Johnson and J.J. Watt.
Yeah.
But I don't want to do that because I know my offense is great with Gronk.
I know.
And I know my defense is great with Revis.
Yeah.
I don't know if I make changes.
I'm sorry. I thought he meant Brady and Gronk.
You said
Gronk
and Revis. If I lost Brady, now Luck is in the equation.
But no, I wouldn't even make as much as I love
Gronk and Revis,
the idea of having a Megatron or
a Larry
Fitzgerald.
No.
I know what I have with Gronk, and he's the most dominant player, and
I
he changes
especially with the trouble that they've had in integrating receivers into the offense. I don't care how good they are. Larry Fitzgerald, Calvin Johnson, Andre Johnson, whoever you want, Dez Bryant.
Yeah, there's no one you're going to get that.
I think those guys, they're probably more dangerous, well-rounded receivers than Gronk, but I don't know that he's going to mesh with Brady the way Gronk does.
Pat from Agawam was the person kind enough
to
thank
you,
lunch today.
Yep.
Getting to his email now. I wanted to look ahead for our first possible opponent on January 10th. I think it's safe to say that we won't see the Bengals. Forget about the what-ifs.
See, I think it's the opposite.
I
think the one I'm ruling out is Indy.
Yeah?
I think Indy's going to lose. And I don't know. I don't know who's going to beat the who's going to win the Steelers-Ravens game. That'll just be a typical AFC.
The fact of the matter is Marvin Lewis has never won a playoff game as a head coach, and I don't envision these playoffs being any different. I'm not sold on Baltimore either. They were fighting for their playoff live Sunday and barely got past the Cleveland team that would make even Rod Rush shake his head. So logically, we should end up playing Indy for the second consecutive season in the playoffs. The most obvious difference this year is a healthy Gronkowski. That being said, I would go with the same game plan that's worked against them the last couple of meetings and run it right down their throat. Let them prove they can at least hold us to less than 10 yards per carry. I'm not trying to look past the divisional round, but I am. I even dare to say we could beat these ass clowns without all of our starting O-line. I believe the real playoffs start when we host either Denver or Pittsburgh in the AFC Championship game. Am I being cocky or just realistic?
No, I don't think that's overly cocky.
Should I fear the likes of the turnover machine that is Andrew Luck or a Baltimore team whose biggest win all year arguably was Week 2 versus Pittsburgh? I know I'm probably making Fred look like Paul in the Homer department with this email, but give me one reason to fear either the Colts or the Ravens. And P.S., sorry if most of my emails seem a little erratic. I'm writing them while I'm supposed to be working.
I don't fear the Colts because of the defense. But the other teams, I think, could pose some problems. I think the Bengals or the Ravens could pose some problems defensively. Here's the other thing. You know, we keep talking about the Colts and Andrew Luck, and at some point he's going to break through. And he's going to win a game in a big spot against a good team. He hasn't been able to do it this year. Matter of fact, they've gotten decimated in a lot of their playoff opponents. If he does that at some point, if he does it for the first time, there's a chance that he might get over the hump. And now you have to deal with a different Andrew Luck. Mm-hmm. If Cincinnati were to go to Indianapolis and win,
you would feel
now
that
you're
way
not
about...
now you're not playing Marvin Lewis and Andy Dalton, the winless playoff team. Right?
They have a little bit of confidence.
I think they become a more dangerous opponent that's more commensurate with their talent as opposed to the Bungles.
Because they're feeling... Right.
Like, if you had to play them in the first game, I wouldn't have much fear.
Yeah.
But now, if they beat Indianapolis on the road and then they come to Foxborough...
A little bit of confidence.
Maybe they're feeling good about themselves and they got that monkey off their back.
Right.
Again, you asked... The question was, give me a reason to fear somebody, to worry about somebody.
Mm-hmm.
I don't worry about it. I don't worry about Cincinnati. I don't worry about Indianapolis. And I'm really not all that worried about Baltimore either.
Right.
I don't think that they have enough offensively to beat you.
But
I'm trying to give you the scenario in which they could pose problems. Luck, he's just good. And he could just all of a sudden the problem with Luck, and everybody calls him a turnover machine,
they ask him to do everything.
They ask him to do absolutely everything. And... I'm sorry, at some point you're going to make mistakes.
With his legs or his arms, he's got to do it all.
With Baltimore, the fear would be exactly what happened 2 years ago. Joe Flacco goes into the postseason and throws 11 touchdowns, no interceptions. And if that happens, Baltimore is an awfully difficult team to beat. And by the way, down the stretch of the season,
played pretty well,
Joe Flacco had 11, I think he had something like 11 touchdowns and four interceptions in the last 5 weeks of the year. And three of those four interceptions came in one game against Houston.
He's played pretty well.
So he's done a really good job of protecting the football. He's had a pretty solid year with not a ton of weapons around him.
Yeah.
He's got a good running game with Justin Forsett. And we already talked about the physical defense that they have up front. Their problem, their Achilles heel to me, is the secondary. They don't have a good secondary. They've been decimated by injuries back there. And I think the Patriots would score too many points here in Foxborough against them.
All right, well, we run up against the time.
But again, Fred, I don't want to make that sound like there's a fear involved.
Right.
I'm just trying to give you the scenarios in which something bad could happen.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not going in too cocky because anything can happen.
I'm pretty
here.
Cocky. I have to admit. I'm already looking at the AFC Championship.
Keep holding
game.
On. John, we'll take you in on the playbook. Obviously, there's a million emails that have come in that we haven't got to. John will get to some of those as well coming up in the playbook. And then we got the fantasy. Still fantasy
Fantasies?
Coming up. I guess they'll wrap up the season. How does that work?
I don't know. I don't play.
I'll have all the 1 week stuff they can talk
about. Yeah, they can do 1 week stuff and they can do
that
in
the playoffs.
They can do it in the playoffs.
Yeah, so it's always fantasy season now that they have these 1 week things. So we'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah.
That was another unpredictable edition of PFW in Progress, the podcast for informed Patriots fans worldwide. Like what you heard from the PFW boys? Then support the show and follow your team even more closely by subscribing to the paper that makes the podcast possible, Patriots Football Weekly. Get your subscription right now by calling 1-800-494-PATS or by logging on to pfwonline.com. There's even a web-only international option for Patriots fans outside the U.S. PFW in Progress, brought to you by the writers of Patriots Football Weekly.